someone cut down in their prime. May not show when you look at me, but I know I'm in mine now. Rest your head on the spread of mother's pride and find out why. Don't you wanna take me home? Don't you wanna take me home? Give me a sense of purpose, a real sense of purpose now. Give me a sense of purpose, a real sense of purpose now.
A former talk show host, everybody knows his name.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Today marks the debut of a California-wide ad blitz targeting Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's proposed healthcare industry changes. The governor has been in a heated battle with the California Nurses Association ever since he announced changes to staffing rules. Schwarzenegger used emergency action to freeze scheduled changes in nurse staffing ratios that would have assigned fewer patients per nurse. The 60,000-member union says that the changes will be harmful to patients. The ad will debut tonight in every major California cable market during a movie about Schwarzenegger's life.
The Kansas Association of Public Employees says Democratic Governor Kathleen Sebelius is allowing illegal anti-union activities against state employees. Betty Vines heads the Employee Association. She says her union has filed two formal complaints with the State Labor Board in Kansas in an effort to halt what she calls management intimidation tactics against the union.
I think it's kind of ironic that we're willing to send people all over the world to fight for other people's rights, and yet we constantly, from national on down, see our citizens being denied rights that should come to them easily, you know, and that they have to have somebody, a union or association, to be there to fight for them daily to make sure that they aren't denied those rights.
Vines says her union won't tolerate intimidation and interference from the state when it comes to the labor rights of state workers.
As garbage workers rallied in Hamilton Township, New Jersey yesterday, their company prepared to start hiring permanent replacement workers. Workers represented by the Teamsters have been striking against Waste Management Incorporated for 22 days, with no date set to resume contract negotiations. The company warned strikers last week that if they didn't accept the company's latest offer, they would face the possibility of being replaced. This week, the company began collecting job applications for permanent replacement workers. Teamsters officials say that because the strike is an unfair labor practices action, the workers are protected from being replaced. The National Labor Relations Board has not yet classified the strike. If the NLRB rules it economic, the workers could be replaced. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Alabama saw a growth spurt in union membership during 2004. Government figures show that 9.7% of Alabama workers belonged to a union in 2004, up from 8.1% in 2003. Nationally, there has been a decline in union membership from 12.9% in 2003 to 12.5% last year. Many states, especially in the South, have seen organizing decrease as plants close and jobs go overseas.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Oh, cruel fate! Have pity on the poor CEOs of corporate world. One day they're strutting peacocks. The next day, they're feather dusters. Several CEOs who've recently had their plumage plucked are in the news again, this time facing trial for various levels of fraud. Kenneth Lay of Enron, Dennis Kozlowski of Tyco, Bernie Ebers of WorldCom, Richard Scrushy of HealthSouth, and Walter Forbes of CUC International are among the former CEOs who once were heralded in business magazines, management books, and the popular media as giants, geniuses, and gurus, the gods of corporate success. Only a couple of years ago, these gentlemen of the executive suite were giving lectures on how to run a modern corporation. Now, they're in the dock. Not only have these gods tumbled from the heights, but their legal defense is that they were never really in charge of their corporations and knew nothing about the multi-billion-dollar heist taking place on their watch. It's the dummy defense. Lay, for example, now says that, golly, while he once took credit for Enron's success, he really can't be responsible for its collapse since he wasn't involved in the details of corporate management. Likewise, Walter Forbes says he was uninvolved in CUC's day-to-day operations because, as CEO, he had his head in the clouds, focusing on, quote, the strategy vision part. The same with Ebers. WorldCom's hotshot chief asserts that he knew nothing about the $11 billion insider fraud that devoured his company, for he left all the arithmetic to his financial people. Even though he has previously claimed credit for being a hands-on financial detail man who made WorldCom a success. This is Jim Hightower saying, odd that these guys who raked in the big bucks for being in charge now claim to have been management dummies and victims of conniving underlings. Odder yet, not one of them offers to give back the loot they took.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what. Support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Exposes political corruption and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome, lovers of democracy, freedom, and the American way. True, true believers in reality and what our world's going to go, where our world's got to go. This is the radio station, Tom Hartman radio program. I'm Rama Schneider sitting in for him. You are where being progressive never felt so good. And it feels great. I got to tell you, after listening to that stuff yesterday, I had to, well, out of loyalty to all you folks out there in radio land, I had to listen to the, oh, that just ongoing 45, 50 minutes worth of listening to George Bush. Anyway, we got a guest on the phone with us today, so let's just hop to it real quick. Oh, by the way, anybody wants to join in and play on the Tom Hartman radio program, your number, 1-866-889-8894. But as I said, joining us on the phone here as a guest, and he'd probably want to hear from you too, is Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, which is one of the leading voices for peace and social justice in this country. Rothschild has appeared on Nightline, C-SPAN, The O'Reilly Factor, NPR, and despite all that, we still like the guy. And he's got newspaper commentaries in the Chicago Tribune, the LA Times, Miami Herald, and a host of other newspapers, and he's also a frequent contributor to The Hill. And on that note, I want to say hello, Mr. Rothschild, and welcome to the Tom Hartman radio program.
Hey, Rama. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, this is great. Thank you very much for doing it. Now, what should I call you? Mr. Rothschild, Your Highness, Your Honor, Matt, Matthew? How do you?
Matt would do just fine.
Matt will do just fine. Okay. Well, you know, I want to give you your option there. I'm
Don't know how good you're feeling about yourself today. I do real quick to get three birds with one water balloon here, if I may, Matt. This kind of promos me, promos you a little bit, and answers any legal questions that I might have. You on your Progressive website put up those sometimes minute and a half, sometimes 2 minute MP3 commentaries, right?
Right. I do that Monday through Friday.
Absolutely. And now on weekends, on Sunday evenings, my wife and I, we do this little webcast. It's called GER Radio, and this is the promo me part, folks. This is pretty much all my own promoing I'll do. But if you go to GERRadio.com, GRRradio.com, there's more information on that. But in our webcast, I usually like to pick off a couple of your better commentaries for the week and to rerun them during our show. Now, that's okay, right?
Yeah, you can go use them as many times as you want. That's what they're up there for.
Okay, so I got promoted, you got promoted, and I'm not in any legal trouble. So, okay.
Not at all.
I'll
let the lawyers go.
I really enjoy them, though. I want to tell you, you have, it seems like, the insight and the willingness to kind of be, I guess, direct and blunt with your assessments of stuff. And is that what you deliberately try to do, Matt?
I sure do. I like to try to speak in language that everyone can understand, and there's no reason to beat around the bush. Let's call Bush what he is, which is just a handmaiden to U.S. corporations and a warmonger, and so I try to get it out there as bluntly as I can.
So you voted for him then?
Not exactly.
Okay. That's cute. Before I want to talk about the State of the Union address, of course, because that was, like I say, unfortunately, that was yesterday. I had to listen to it because I was filling in for Tom today, and normally I try to avoid listening to them, but it's I did. But before we get to that, progressive. Matt, you call yourself a progressive. Do you distinguish that from liberal, and how would you define progressive?
You know, I don't. I know a lot of people in the academy like to do that and draw some distinctions, but we're proud to be progressive. We'll sign on to being liberal, too. We'll sign on to being left-leaning as well. By progressive, we mean we respect freedom, civil rights, civil liberties, the environment, and we're very suspicious of corporate power, and we're also very suspicious of U.S. aggression around the world, which we think this Iraq war is an example of, and we're worried about what Bush was saying last night about going to Iran.
Oh, gosh, not just Iran. He had Syria in his sights there, too, in that speech, didn't he?
He sure did. He wants to conquer the whole Middle East.
Hey, speaking of that, and I guess to backtrack, during the Condoleezza Rice hearings, do you have any idea why I kept hearing Venezuela pop up?
I sure do, because they hate Hugo Chavez there, who's the democratically elected leader of Venezuela. And Venezuela is one of the places where the United States gets a lot of its own oil.
Yeah, like 15% of our yearly
oil. Yeah, there's a lot of oil down there in Venezuela that comes directly to the United States. And so Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld and Condoleezza Rice, they were involved in this effort to overthrow Chavez once about a year and a half ago in a coup that failed. And I think they probably were cursing the CIA for not learning how to do a coup right down in Caracas, Venezuela. But I think they may try to go after Chavez again at some point.
See, that's the darndest thing. And I mean, Bush, he talks about spreading freedom and how democracy is the basis for the freedom. Yet you look, like you mentioned, there was that attempted coup down in Venezuela. That was in 2002, lasted about 4 or 5 days, had the full support of the U.S. government, even some surreptitious funding from the U.S. government. And then, of course, in just this last year, they tried to Arnold Schwarzenegger recall Chavez, and he won the recall election. It was 60 to 40%, I believe, was the final tally. So it's,
yeah, I mean, the talk about democracy and promoting democracy and ending tyranny is just so much hypocrisy from Bush because of what he was doing in Venezuela or what he was doing in Haiti, where the U.S. supported the overthrow of Aristide. And then look at some of the governments the U.S. does support. For instance, Uzbekistan and one of those former Soviet republics. Here's a government that boils political prisoners to death. And Bush and Rumsfeld play footsie with these guys.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Bush and Rumsfeld. All right. my apologies. Well, let's start off then. Here's Bush's opening statement in his State of the Union address, because it has to do with what we just talked. So I just want to play it. It's just a real short clip here. Well, somewhere in there. Well, maybe not. I thought I had his opening clip ready to go here. And I guess I didn't, so unfortunately that won't play. But let me read it real quick. As a new Congress gathers, all of us in the elected branches of the government share a great privilege. We've been placed in office by the votes of the people we serve, and tonight there is a privilege we share with newly elected leaders in Afghanistan, the Palestinian territories, Ukraine, and a free and sovereign Iraq. Now, when he started his inauguration speech, he had in there that line about that was totally historically inaccurate, just as this beginning line is, and this is why I mention it, that in his inauguration speech, Matt, Bush talked about how the 90s was like a quiet period between the shipwreck of communism, as he phrased it, and the day of fire. You know, 9/11 is now the day of fire. And, of course, if you leave out the 90s, you kind of skip the first Gulf War. You skip Haiti. You skip Somalia. You skip Bosnia, Kosovo. You skip the bombings of the Khobar Towers and the embassies down in Africa and massive missile attacks against Iraq, massive missile attacks against Afghanistan. You just skip a whole lot of violence in order to try to claim that the 90s were peaceful and calm. And now, as we were just talking about, he starts off this speech with this grandiose statement about freedom and democracy, and he brings up these countries, and in Afghanistan you have a government that's barely in control of its capital. The Palestinian territories, they're not new to elections. They had very successful elections when they elected Yasser Arafat. He's very popular there. The Ukraine, okay, sure, they had an Ohio election that they solved, okay. But this election in Iraq, nobody really knows what's going on. What I'm trying to get at is When Bush starts a speech, he tries to go out and sound like he's a man of the world, but there's a sense of historical inaccuracy. Do you get that sense about him too?
I sure do, and you know he always tries to clamber up on top of the moral high ground there. His repeated statement again last night that he's going to end tyranny. I mean, this is just the most megalomaniacal guy in the world. He thinks he can rid the world of evil and end tyranny. At least that's what his rhetoric is. But he is supporting tyranny, as I was suggesting, in many places, including in Pakistan. And so there's a real lie to the rhetoric there. And by the same token, I mean, this guy loves being a war president. And he was really rattling the sabers, as you were correctly saying, about Syria and about Iran. Interestingly,
right.
North Korea seemed to go into third place as the next likely target of the U.S. government because he only mentioned it in passing once last night. But
that's right.
He called Iran, you know, the leading source of state-sponsored terror in the world, and he said, we're going to stand with the Iranian people who want freedom. I mean, in Tehran, people must be cowering right now.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. The way we stand with people is 2,000-pound bombs, so it's kind of tough. Without getting into quite specifics yet, because we're already starting to get some phone calls, too, so I want to, you know, I know people want to talk to you, and I want to give them a chance, but without getting into specifics yet, overall, how do you rate the State of the Union speech? Was it good? Was it bad? Informative? Was it just meaningless blather, or where would you put it, Matt?
Well, I just thought it was more fear-mongering. I mean, this is the only card the guy knows how to play. Create a false crisis and then force it down people's throats. That's what he was doing with Social Security, where he was just completely distorting what the problem is there. It's not that big of a problem. It's not that imminent of a problem. It's an easy problem to solve.
Yeah.
And Bush wants to ruin the whole thing. And he's saying the government's not going to have enough money in 2027. It's going to have to scrounge up some $200 billion. That's a lie. That's nonsense. The Social Security Trust Fund is in surplus in the year 2027. It's going to be in surplus up to the year 2052. And even then, it'll still be able to pay 78% of benefits, which is a lot more than Bush is going to be paying people after that. He's going to reduce benefits by 40%. And so I don't know what he's talking about there. He also isn't talking at all about people who are under 55, what's going to happen to them. I mean, he put us all on alert that, you know, if we're expecting decent Social Security in our lifetime, if he gets his way, we better think otherwise. And what about the poor people who are disabled getting Social Security who are under 55 today? What's going to happen to them? He didn't have a single answer for those people, and there's 6 million of them.
Yeah, oh boy, he perked me right up when he said 55 and up. I said, whoa, I'm only 47.
I'm 46. What's going to happen to us?
Absolutely. Yeah, where do they come with that? Now the Democrats actually did boo a little bit when Bush was trying to pass off some of this stuff on Social Security. I mean, where do they keep coming up with these numbers?
Well, the Social Security Trust Fund has estimated that the system will be in surplus until 2042, and then the Congressional Budget Office just the other day lifted that up to 2052. And no one says that we're going to be out of a surplus anytime soon, so why there's all this talk of a crisis, I don't know. I was happy to hear some Democrats booing last night. It's about time some Democrats stood up and stood their ground and resisted, being just, props, applause props for Bush. We've had enough of that kind of Democrat.
Yeah, actually. It did. It made me feel somewhat pretty darn good when I heard them doing that. I guess, okay, we're coming up on a hard break here, Matt. So can I get you to stick around through the commercials? We've got some people on the phone that want to talk to you. And then if you've got time, I mean, I've really got a whole lot of things I'd like to give you a chance to comment on while you're on the phone with us.
No problem. I'm all ears.
All right. That's great. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman on the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Stay tuned. You all will be right back.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brush Show, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hank Montenegro of Morganville, New Jersey wrote, "Dear Mr. Oric, ever since we purchased your 8-pound Oric XL vacuum, my wife has been in heaven. Recently, she panicked, believing she'd broken the vacuum. I contacted your customer service department, and after a few questions, I was sent a replacement part at no charge. The machine is as good as new. Try my 8-pound Oric XL risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. for a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Taking on gang life will be one part of a broader outreach to at-risk youth, which involves parents and pastors, coaches and community leaders, and programs ranging from literacy to sports.
And which just provides the evidence that Hillary was right, it takes a village, and even the neocons are coming around to that kind of attitude. That you just can't raise a kid based upon mom and pop alone, even though I think it's a pretty good idea. Hey, on the phone with us is Matt Rothschild, editor of the Progressive Magazine, one of the leading voices for peace and social justice in this country. And welcome back, Matt, and once again, thank you very much for spending time with us. And I guess let's go right to the phones, if you don't mind, Matt. Oh, Matt, you there?
I'm right here.
Okay, all right. Let's now I think I got all the sliders, all the switches right. Mark from Woodlawn, Tennessee. You're on the Tom Hartman Radio Show. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, Rama. How are you?
I'm doing great.
And Mike, how are you?
That's Matt. M-A-T-T.
Matt, I'm sorry. Okay. Last night, the president let the cat out of the bag when he was talking about tort reform. He mentioned asbestos.
Ah, yes.
The thing that he said, it involves Halliburton. They owned a very large asbestos company. And they are fixing to get astounding amount of lawsuits and maybe class action lawsuits. And he wants to limit the damages. And the asbestosis problem that Halliburton caused is fixing to really put a hurt in Halliburton. And that's one of the reasons why he wants to limit tort reform.
Is there a question? Okay, Matt, what do you think?
Well, I think Mark is raising a really good point because Bush reserved most of his compassion not for poor people or people in gangs last night, but for the rich and for corporations. He talked about needless regulation, junk lawsuits, class actions, and frivolous asbestos claims. When was the last time you heard a president take part of his State of the Union address to talk about helping the asbestos industry, which is responsible for killing about 10,000 people in the last two decades? But that gives you an idea where Bush's priorities are coming from.
That's absolutely where his priorities are coming from. And as far as Social Security, I don't even want to go down that road. We all know that is just nothing but bull. His whole, everything that he has signed into law since he's been in position for the last 4 years has not benefited the middle class or the working people. It has all been corporate, everything.
All right. Well, hey, Mark, thanks a lot for the call. I want to move along. We got some other people that want to talk, all right?
Okay, Rob.
Good deal. Thank you. Any follow-up there on what Mark was just saying, Matt?
Oh, I think Mark's got it right on the head. What Bush has come to power for in his first term and even more now in this term is helping out the corporations, helping out the top 1% of Americans. He talked about making those tax giveaways permanent last night, and making war. That's what gets his blood going.
Those are tax deferments, by the way. All they're doing is putting off. Are you going to be able to sit through one more commercial break, do you think?
Sure.
Do you have the patience for that? Good, because we only got a couple minutes here, and there's more people that want to talk to you. I don't want to short somebody on their time. So were you aware, Matt, we're talking to Matt Rothschild, editor of the Progressive Magazine. Matt, were you aware that the New York Stock Exchange is a nonprofit?
I'm aware of that, yes.
You are? I did not know that, and it simply amazes me. I'm looking at a Wall Street Journal article from today. Dick Grasso's perks as chairman of the New York Stock Exchange included $240,000 a year secretary, $230,000 a year drivers, club memberships, access to private planes. That's not to, that's including, well, it came out, they figured his total compensation was $193 million.
So hey, we're a nonprofit. I'm not getting near that.
What's wrong with you, Matt?
I'm doing something wrong here.
Yeah, but there isn't a nonprofit supposed to be like educating the public or something, serving the public good?
Supposed to.
Or am I missing? I don't know. All right. Well, hang tight, folks. If you're on the line there, we'll be getting you with Matt. Rama Schneider in for Tom Hartman. You will be right back.
Love rules.
Our son gets mad. He tries to shout.
We'll take away his cell phone, his video game.
And if we have to, we'll take away his freedom.
He's got to understand that there will be consequences for breaking our rules.
It doesn't matter that he's not smoking. When we say not to hang out with the weed crowd,
we mean it.
That's what it takes to keep him away from marijuana.
And we love him enough to live with that.
Love, the anti-drug. Call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com for information on how to prevent your child from using marijuana. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for Drug-Free America.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Today marks the debut of a California-wide ad blitz targeting Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's proposed healthcare industry changes. The governor has been in a heated battle with the California Nurses Association ever since he announced changes to staffing rules. Schwarzenegger used emergency action to freeze scheduled changes in nurse staffing ratios that would have assigned fewer patients per nurse. The 60,000-member union says that the changes will be harmful to patients. The ad will debut tonight in every major California cable market during a movie about Schwarzenegger's life.
The Kansas Association of Public Employees says Democratic Governor Kathleen Sebelius is allowing illegal anti-union activities against state employees. Betty Vines heads the employee association. She says her union has filed two formal complaints with the state labor board in Kansas in an effort to halt what she calls management intimidation tactics against the union.
I think it's kind of ironic that we're willing to send people all over the world to fight for other people's rights, and yet we constantly, from national on down, see our citizens being denied rights that should come to them easily, you know, and that they have to have somebody, a union or association, to be there to fight for them daily to make sure that they aren't denied those rights.
Vines says her union won't tolerate intimidation and interference from the state when it comes to the labor rights of state workers.
As garbage workers rallied in Hamilton Township, New Jersey yesterday, their company prepared to start hiring permanent replacement workers. Workers represented by the Teamsters have been striking against Waste Management Incorporated for 22 days with no date set to resume contract negotiations. The company warned strikers last week that if they didn't accept the company's latest offer, they would face the possibility of being replaced. This week, the company began collecting job applications for permanent replacement workers. Teamsters officials say that because the strike is an unfair labor practices action, the workers are protected from being replaced. The National Labor Relations Board has not yet classified the strike. If the NLRB rules it economic, the workers could be replaced. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Alabama saw a growth spurt in union membership during 2004. Government figures show that 9.7% of Alabama workers belonged to a union in 2004, up from 8.1% in 2003. Nationally, there has been a decline in union membership from 12.9% in 2003 to 12.5% last year. Many states, especially in the South, have seen organizing decrease as plants close and jobs go overseas.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
All right, welcome back. Tom Hartman Radio Program. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom, who is in transit today. He will be with you folks live and safe tomorrow. So here we go. Anyway, I've got controls of the spaceship today. And just to remember, DemocraticMatch.com. That's where you can go and kind of maybe meet your next sweetie. DemocraticMatch.com. EcoWine.com. 1-888-ECO-WINE and SmallDog.com. That's 1-800-511-MAX. Joining us on the phone is Matt Rothschild, editor of the Progressive magazine, one of the leading voices for peace, social justice in this country. And this guy is does writing and speaking for, I don't know, pretty much the whole world, the best I can tell. I'd read you everything we have here, but it'd take too long. So once again, thank you very much for joining us, Matt. And I would like to point out, I was looking through his speech, and you know, in the, this is off the White House website, Matt, they have their the State of the Union speech posted up there, and everywhere where the walruses jumped up and flapped their fins together, they have applause put in parentheses. But when Bush was talking about Social Security, I noticed they didn't put boo in parentheses after any of these statements. They were missing something there.
Yeah, they missed a little bit of the drama there. I mean, people can download it, too, from whitehouse.gov, which is where I got it, too. You know what bothered me more than anything about the whole speech?
What?
It was that one moment when Bush was manipulating the Iraq war, and he had the ill manners to put a poor mom up there lost her son in the Iraq war. Her name was Janet Norwood,
yep.
And Bush was trying to salute her as being this brave mom, who I'm sure she is, but just to look at her up there and the devastation that registered on her face, it looked like the woman was about to collapse from the grief that she still must be feeling about losing her son to the Iraq war. And for Bush to make her go through this as a prop for his Iraq policy that has killed more than 1,450 U.S. soldiers and wounded 10,000 more, I thought was a real low, low point.
Yeah, you know what? I hadn't thought about it that way, but you're right. And they do need their props. Otherwise, they look as dumb as they sound, in my opinion. Let's head over to the phone lines here. Margaret from Asheville, you're on the Tom Hartman radio show at 1-866-889-8894.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon, Margaret.
I have a subscription to the Progressive. Thank you very much, Matt.
No, thank you, Margaret.
I'm 59, so I suppose I should feel good that he's not going to mess with my Social Security. this is sort of a sidebar, but my immediate response to that out loud was I flipped the channel and thought, and he doesn't think that the baby boomers are going to fight for their children and their grandchildren and great-grandchildren's rights? He doesn't know our generation very well, does he? This is what I'm calling about in regards to Social Security. In June 9, 2000, prior to the original election, he gave a speech in Wilton, Connecticut. And this is the quote, because I have tried for years to understand this, but I think I've got some inkling. I'd like your intake. This quote, there's not going to be enough people in the system to take advantage of people like me, unquote. Now, to me, that's a key to what their intentions are, which we need to unearth if we're going to stop these people. Their true intentions. But when he's saying there's not going to be enough people in the system to take advantage of people like me, and now he's, you know, our soldiers are getting killed, maimed. We don't even know how many are in psych hospitals that are vegetables. We don't know the numbers. So, do you have an understanding of that statement?
Oh, Margaret, I can't make heads or tails of it. I can't understand half the thing that he says off the cuff. But what I do know about Social Security and Bush is that for decades he's wanted to destroy the program. He thinks it's a program of socialism. Here's a guy who's against the New Deal. He wants to go back to a place where, you know, 30% of our elderly were in poverty, which was what was going on before the New Deal, before Social Security. And I don't think a lot of Americans, if they come to grips with that, are going to want to go along.
Well, he's destroying all of our social structure. All the money goes to the military. I'm a military child, and thank God my Republican father is in the grave. He would be absolutely livid at this Abu Ghraib prison thing. It just turns my stomach. I'm ashamed to be an American anymore. But he is destroying the middle and the working class. And it's intentional what they are doing to us, and I'm just returning into a third world gulag, and God, are we going, is there any way we can take back our Constitution?
Well, I sure hope so. We got to fight for it, though, Margaret. That's for sure.
I know we have to fight for it. I've been fighting since December of 2000.
Me too.
And I don't know where to fight anymore. I mean, I've actually thought about what other country can I go to.
Oh, Margaret, if I can suggest it, is rather than feel hopeless, the best thing to do to feel empowered, literally, is to go out and do something. Even if you go out and find a small thing to do, it's just something that you sit there and you say, I'm going to do this to fight back. A very wise woman on the radio once said, and it always stuck with me, you're never powerless as long as you don't give up. You
right.
only lose all power when you give up. And I know it sounds easy, but, you know, holding a sign by the side of the road, being involved in local politics, volunteering at the library, things like that, that all will give you a sense of actually directly affecting stuff. Progressive politics happens at the local level, always.
Yeah.
So okay, be involved.
Oh, I have been involved, and
yeah.
I will as long as I'm still here.
All right. Well, great. Thanks very
Thank
much
you.
For the call, Margaret.
Thank you.
You have a great day.
You too.
Anything you want to add to her comments, Matt?
Well, I think she's right on two points. I think she was right about everything, but I don't think we need to give up. I never give up hope, and
yeah.
that's only when we become hopeless, when we give it up, totally. And I think these people are going to get beat back. I think Bush is way overstepped with Social Security. He is trying to redistribute wealth from the poor and the middle class to the upper class. That's what he's been doing since day one. And I do agree with her that the Abu Ghraib scandal is just a terrible blot on our reputation, and that Bush should be impeached for that, and Rumsfeld should be prosecuted for that, because it's against the Geneva Convention, it's against the Convention Against Torture and Mistreatment, it's against U.S. statute,
yep.
and they can't just unilaterally get out of these treaties.
Do you kind of get the sense a lot of this gathering around the president is more out of like a personal idolatry of George Bush, or is this a Republican Party political ill gathering, you know, circling the wagons to protect Bush from any negative, or even Rice or Gonzalez? You know, is it a political party thing, or is it a personal idolatry?
I think there are a couple things going on. One is it's crass party politics. The Republicans got the power. They want to keep the power. But the other thing is there is a chunk of the population that believes, actually, as the Reverend Billy Graham said on the day after inauguration at the National Prayer Service, that God put Bush and Cheney in office. And for those people who believe that, there's really not much arguing with them.
Well, what did
and
we do wrong?
I mean, it's just a totally unarguable assertion. Because no one knows if there is a God, and secondly, if there actually is a God, what that God's intentions are. And so for Billy Graham to say, and Bush himself actually believes this, that God put him in the Oval Office, I mean, that is not what we're supposed to have in this democracy. You know, we're supposed to have a separation of church and state. Our founders fought against the notion of the divine right of kings. And we're getting to that point with a group of people in this country who believe that.
Yeah. Okay, well, we've got some more phone calls to take here, if you don't mind, Matt. This is another Matt. This is Matt from Kansas. You're on the Tom Hartman radio program, 1-866-889-8894. And also we have Matt Rothschild, editor of the Progressive Magazine, one of the leading voices for peace and social justice in this country. So Matt, go ahead.
Hey, pleasure to visit with you. Just a real quick point. You know, you were talking about the redistribution of wealth, and if you really take a good hard look at it, what we're seeing here is the Bush administration just trying to save employers money. When you pay into Social Security, your employer matches that. If you don't pay into Social Security or you pay less into Social Security, there's no mention whatsoever of the employer, matching the funds that you would put into this personal account.
What do you say,
well,
Matt?
I think that's a great point. And what Bush is going to be doing by letting the employers off the hook and draining employee contributions to the Social Security Trust Fund, he's going to be draining 32% of the revenues that are supposed to go into Social Security. And so what is that? That's going to cost $2 or $3 trillion. That is what really threatens the viability of Social Security, not its current existence, which is pretty solvent until 2052, and after that almost 80% solvent. So he's creating the myth of a current crisis, and in the process will create a real crisis.
Okay. Hey, Matt.
That's what it's about. Hey, thanks. I got to go, guys. Pleasure visiting with you.
All right, great. Thanks for calling. All right.
The goal here is greater security in retirement, so we will set careful guidelines for personal accounts. We'll make sure the money can only go into a conservative mix of bonds and stock funds. We'll make sure that your earnings are not eaten up by hidden Wall Street fees. We'll make sure there are good options to protect your investments from sudden market swings on the eve of your retirement. We'll make sure a personal account cannot be emptied out all at once, but rather paid out over time as an addition to traditional Social Security benefits. And we'll make sure this plan is fiscally responsible. By starting personal accounts gradually and raising the yearly limits on contributions over time, eventually permitting all workers to set aside 4 percentage points of their payroll taxes in their accounts.
You know, listening to that, two things come to mind. First of all, is he describes the Social Security program really well there. A safe investment that's going to ensure that you have something to keep you out of poverty in your old age. Am I missing anything there?
Yeah, I mean, he said that, and he thanked the New Deal program, and then said we've got to honor its morality, really, in the speech. And then in the cut that you just mentioned there, he was talking about all the problems with this privatization scheme and said, trying in a defensive way to counteract the criticism that's already been leveled against him, that it's going to be a giveaway to the Wall Street funds who are going to, you know, knock each investor with some fees, which is actually going to reduce the amount of money people can earn on these privatization accounts that he's so hot to trot on.
Yeah, the proletariat. He says a word I'm not going to say on the radio, but something Rama. I do not want to hear this. Something else I'm not going to say on the radio. So that's the chat room, by the way. Anybody that wants to join, go to TomHartmann.com and click on chat room. You can get in there. I got the sense though that A, he's telling people, look, we're not going to take your money and force you to put into this guaranteed government run insurance program, which has worked magnificently over the last 60 years. What we're going to instead is force you to put your money and hand it over to some investment firm that happens to have the political connections to get the A-OK. Are we going to run it? Is this, are we opening up to, I don't know, just nepotism here, people getting filthy rich off of our retirement investments?
Well, this has long been a pipe dream of the investment firms on Wall Street who've been pushing this and lobbying this and funneling money to right-wing and libertarian think tanks that can then send their speakers around the country acting impartial but actually advocating for exactly what the Wall Street firms want them to advocate for, which is a policy that is going to enrich them and put people's Social Security at great risk so that people, when they retire, when they get to be 65 or 67, will not have a guarantee that they won't, you know, have to be eating cat food.
Yeah, and if anybody wonders what comes of something like this, I suggest if you're I guess under 30, go back and research the savings and loans debacle of the late 80s and early 90s. 1-866-889-8894. We're talking with Matt Rothschild, editor of the Progressive Magazine, one of the leading voices for peace and social justice, and John from Shreveport, Louisiana. How you doing, John?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for taking my call. Since I've heard your guest there speaking for this period of time, I got really, I guess, now two questions.
Okay.
One, what's his definition of the word progressive?
Okay, Matt.
Well, John, my definition of a progressive is someone who stands for civil rights and civil liberties and protecting the environment, but someone who is also very suspicious of corporate power and doesn't like the history of U.S. military aggression overseas since really, you know, the Spanish-American War.
Mm-hmm.
And with the exception of World War II, almost mm-hmm. every war the United States has been in has been unwarranted and caused a lot of trouble.
Okay. I like that definition. Now, I guess by your definition, that means I'm in a certain degree progressive. All right, now let me ask you the next question.
Hey, wait a minute, John. Before we take up time being trying to do this question and answer bit, why don't you make your point and ask him a direct question?
It's a direct question.
All right, let's cut through all the...
Sure, we can do that. I mean, it's a direct question. I just need yes or no. Saddam Hussein's been out of power now for 17 months. Are you happy or sad about it?
Well, I am certainly not a defender of Saddam Hussein. I think it's great that he's gone. The U.S. was a big supporter of
Saddam
Hussein.
The
question really is, was this war worth killing 1,450 U.S. soldiers, wounding 10,000 U.S. soldiers, and killing 100,000 Iraqis? And that's a hard question to answer.
Now, John, you know, that's not what he said at all. And this is the simple...
Then what's the answer to my question? Are you happy or sad?
The simple answer is this, John. We were lied into going to war against Iraq. Iraq was not a threat to the United States. Iraq was not a threat to its neighbors. Iraq did not have weapons of mass destruction. And we could have, John, and we could have chased Saddam out of power in much less violent ways, all right?
Are you happy or sad that he's out of power?
The answer is we, the United States, should not be in Iraq militarily. Am I glad that somebody like Saddam is not there? Sure, but what is he, but what has he been replaced with? You ask the Iraqi people, hey, do they care if it's one of Saddam's henchmen shooting them or if it's one of our 500-pound bombs dropping on them?
Hey, every country has got to go through its own development.
To them, it's the same thing. Well, not by our mandate, John, all right? Hey, Matt. I want to thank you very much for taking time. I'm going to let you go now.
Thanks, Rama. It's been a pleasure.
And you have a great day.
You too. Take
care. All right.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
In some parts of the world, a shortage of protein leads to an abundance of poaching. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. People and wildlife are suffering from severe overfishing in the waters of West Africa. Researchers say the fishery has been depleted as a result of overexploitation, and people can no longer rely on fish to get cheap protein into their diets. People are turning to animal meat as a replacement, and they're getting it by poaching in wildlife reserves. Justin Prechers is a wildlife ecologist at the University of California in Berkeley. He studied the rise and fall of fish populations off the coast of Ghana during the past 30 years. Ghana is on Africa's Atlantic coast, and people there have depended on fish for generations. Prechers says the importance of this fishery stretches from the Atlantic coast to the edge of the Sahara Desert.
It's actually when you get much further inland, in some cases even into sub-desert or desert communities, hundreds, in some cases 1,000 miles from the coast, where you realize that it's these smoked or dried fish, particularly these small sardines and anchovy-type things, that are the primary source of animal protein. And they're the cheapest. They're still, despite the cost of getting these fish transported all the way out to these villages in the middle of nowhere, they're still the cheapest source of animal protein around.
Prechers says this source of protein and economic livelihood is disappearing because of overfishing. He says people all over West Africa are now hunting in game reserves to get protein from meat. His work shows that hunting has been hard on herds of wild animals, including elk and leopards. Prechers published his findings last November in the journal Science. He says these problems occur around the world, and we need to find new ways to give people cheap protein that doesn't come from fish or other animals in the wild. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
All right, welcome back. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman. Tom's off for the day. He's in transit. He will be back with everybody live and well tomorrow. Okay, we got a couple of callers here that I want to get through. I want to let you guys get in your last words before the top of the hour. So, Harry from Ann Arbor, Michigan, how you doing? Let's make it quick.
Well,
I got another caller.
Harry calling. I'm one of the 1/3. 92 old recipients of Social Security insurance.
Wow.
And I can live with dignity on my social insurance that I'm getting every month. So are 1/3 of the aged population. And where are the Democrats that started fighting? They act like a bunch of pussycats. They can win the two six elections just on one issue with Social Security.
All right.
Take the 20 and 30 years all that Bush is counting on.
Yep.
How are they going to get married when they
can't afford it? Yep.
I'm not talking about can't afford it, but they're going to have their fathers and mothers and father-in-laws and mother-in-laws living them like the past.
Yeah.
Like they did before we had Social Security. Most of the people don't know what the hell it was all about.
All right.
The Democrats ought to get off that can and start fighting like lions, not like pussycats.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Harry. Congratulations. All right. David from Baton Rouge, make it quick here because you're going to run out of time.
Yeah, sorry about that. I had a couple of questions for y'all. I'm a conservative, and I was trying to get y'all to help me understand because I have some problems
okay.
trying to do here.
Let me suggest this then, Dave, because we really won't have time here. We only got another like minute or so left, I think even less. I've got a pretty interesting guest that will be talking about father-daughter relationships coming up at the top of the hour.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we get down after the guest there, we'll have more time to go back to the phones. You want to try back then? Because thank you very much. I'd love to have the discussion, find out what you think, too.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, great. All right, so hopefully we'll hear back from David in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I just want to say, John from Shreveport there, he sounds a lot like these people on cable television. They get these talking heads to talk about Iraq and how things are going, whether it's going good or bad. And who do they always get? They always get somebody from the United States to be their talking head, right? John's doing exactly what the cable and the right-wing whack jobs on the radio always do. It's all U.S.-centric terms. Everything's about the U.S., the U.S., the U.S. It's not whether we think it was worth it, all right? Saddam was no threat to us. It's whether the Iraqi people want it to get bombed the way they've been bombed and destroyed. Rama Schneider in for Tom Hartman. Stick around the news, and then you'll be right back.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way: to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
United Airlines flight attendants and pilots accepted new contracts on Monday, while the Mechanics Union rejected their offer this weekend. In an effort to emerge from bankruptcy, the airline has been reducing wages and benefits across the board. The mechanics overwhelmingly voted down the contract offer, and more than 85% voted to authorize strike action. Richard Turk is the communications director for the Aircraft Mechanics Fraternal Association.
Basically, the strike part of it's not going to come into play unless the judge abrogates our contract. If he abrogates our contract, we feel we have the right to strike. You can't change someone's contract and expect them to continue to work under it without having the right to self-help.
Turk says that each member has their own reason for rejecting the contract because not a single item in it wasn't concessionary.
I think the overriding issue is that most of the membership feels like enough is enough. We've taken pay cuts and we've done everything we can to help sustain United Airlines. We're willing to make United a better company. But until they change the way they do business, nothing's going to happen. They're not going to make money, even when they continue to take big cuts from us and subsidize fares with it.
The pilots agreed to an 11.8% pay cut, and the flight attendants will have their wages reduced by 9.5%. As for the mechanics, Turk says that the ball is now in the airline's court.
Montana has joined a list of red states where state employees face problems from Republicans over collective bargaining. Republicans in Montana's state house are holding up approval of a collective bargaining agreement reached between the Montana Public Employees Association and Governor Brian Schweitzer. Schweitzer is a newly elected Democratic governor. Tom Schneider, executive director of the Montana Public Employees Association, says state employees face a political stalemate forced by Republicans in Montana who control half of the state house.
Now we have a stalemated situation where at the present time we don't have a pay bill per se before the legislature because the Republicans refuse to back off of their proposal, and the Democrats are sticking with what was negotiated with the governor.
Democrats control the state Senate in Montana, and there's a Democratic governor as well, but the state House must also sign off on the pay raise for state workers. Schneider says state workers in Montana have the right to strike, and it would be a shame if that had to happen to enforce an agreement that the governor has already approved. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. America's harvest of shame continues when it comes to working and living conditions for farm workers. Oxfam says nearly 2 million farm workers, mostly immigrants, work like machines in the fields for poverty wages. Half of all farm worker families earn less than $10,000 a year. A tomato farm worker must pick nearly 2 tons of tomatoes to earn $50. Farm workers in the U.S. today are effectively earning 30% less than they were in 1980.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
In the depths of the Great Depression, not a single public library in America closed its doors. Banks went under, farmers went bankrupt, millions of people were out of work and out of luck, but the American public clung to its libraries, not only because of their inherent value to our society, but also because they are symbols of community strength and hope. How lame, then, to see public officials today, from George W. Bush to city council members, reaching for the budget acts to whack library funding, forcing branches to close, valuable services to be eliminated, and hours to be cut. In a time when governments dump billions of taxpayer dollars into corporate subsidies and boondoggles, our so-called leaders are failing the people by going after these true public treasures. Check out Salinas, California, a hard-hit working-class city which is now the largest population in America without a public library. Ironically, this is the hometown of John Steinbeck, the prize-winning author of The Grapes of Wrath and other powerful works that chronicle the human spirit during the Depression years. Steinbeck knew that literature has the power to elevate the spirit and help people rise above difficult times, and it's said that he got some of his early exposure to the power of literature at the Salinas Library. Since Steinbeck's day, Salinas expanded to 3 branch libraries, one named after him. But now, all 3 have been closed by the city council, which is facing large budget deficits. This move shuts out the 1,900 people a day who count on the library for books, literacy courses, internet access, after-school programs, and other services. Also, nearly 3 dozen employees have been shown the door. This is Jim Hightower saying, this is not a Salinas story, but a failure of all public leadership. Why are they dumping billions into Bush's Star Wars boondoggle, for example, while public libraries, which provide essential services that keep America informed and enlightened, are forced to go begging?
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac. The libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what. Support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
All right, welcome, lovers of freedom, democracy, patriots, followers of truth. Anyway, welcome back to the Tom Hartman radio program. I'm Rama Schneider, filling in for Tom Hartman. I'm just going to keep saying it, where being progressive never felt so gosh darned good. If you want to play around in the Tom Hartman radio program, it's easy. Just get your grubby little fingers over to the phone. 1-866-889-8894 gets you live and on the air. Well, hopefully live. I mean, I guess you could be a computer-generated voice. I don't know. We do, however, have a guest with us to start off this hour, and joining us from the organization Dads and Daughters is Mr. Joe Kelly. And hello, Mr. Kelly. Thank you very much for joining us.
Well, it's my pleasure, Ram. Good to be with you.
And I'm just going to read a little bit about what you sent here, and then I want you to introduce yourself, how you want to be known and how you want the organization to be known. But Dads and Daughters is the national advocacy nonprofit for fathers and daughters. Dads inspires, that's the acronym, D-A-D, Dads and Daughters. Dads inspires fathers to actively and deeply engage in the lives of their daughters and galvanizes fathers and others to transform reform the pervasive cultural message that devalue girls and women. And let me just say up front, Joe, that I am the father of a daughter. And
oh, good.
How
old is she?
She's, oh, thanks for the question. She's she's 11.
Okay.
She's 11. And I have helped two teenage young ladies go on into adulthood. So, you know, I've got a lot of experience with being knocked around the house by women. So I do understand what you're saying about fathers being involved with daughters. But I guess maybe I get a feel for it because I deal with it day to day, though. What do you mean? I mean, with fathers being actively involved, are we just there to tell them what to do so that they'll be on the straight and narrow? Or what do you mean by being actively and engaged in the lives of a daughter?
I think being actively engaged means listening, means taking her seriously, knowing what's going on in her life, what's important to her, making myself available to her, providing her with time and attention.
Right.
And also to be raising my awareness of the sexist nature of the culture and the real serious challenges she faces as a female in our culture, and doing my part to A, help her resist it, and B, help to change that culture so that it no longer sends those harmful messages to daughters or to sons.
So one of the prime reasons you're here is to talk about one of these examples, about sexism in the culture. But give me some examples so that the listeners know what we're referring to here.
In terms of examples of?
Sexism in the society.
Denigrate
women.
The thing we're going to talk about here in a minute about this Sports Illustrated swimsuit model search program at NBC, you know, is a great example, or unfortunately it's only one example, of the objectification of girls and women. And, you know, and that, you know, valuing girls and women for how they look rather than for who they are. Valuing them for how much males desire them rather than for their own desires and their own passions and their own feelings about the world. You know, and we also face still, unfortunately, some, you know, very structural inequities in terms of education available, sports activities available to girls and women, pay inequity, all that sort of thing. And when I put my daughter's face in the picture, and I have two daughters who are 24 years old, they're twins.
Okay.
When I put their face in that picture, it really makes me angry to think that they're going to be treated as objects or not taken as seriously as men are just because they're women.
Now, men, they put buff guys in magazines all the time, too, to sell stuff, to be models.
Well, I would, you know, I would challenge them all the time.
Okay.
I think if you toted up the numbers, part of the reason that this, you know, objectification of women is hard to see is because it's so normal.
Right.
You know, the use of body parts in advertising and, you know, female body parts in advertising to try and, you know, sell us stuff. I mean, it's just ubiquitous.
Now, is there, see, here's where I run into a block, and I was talking about it with the wife, too, and she actually has more problems, I guess, with your stance than I do, in the sense that we know a young lady, she's one of these, she's in her, I believe she's about 16, but she went and was in the Miss Vermont contest not too long ago, and you know, there was part. I thought it was distasteful that a Miss Teen has a bathing suit contest. I'm not sure why they do that, but and in that part, I guess I agree with you. But the idea is they're not just there to be physically paraded around; that they're supposed to be tested on things that, of knowledge, and they're supposed to be tested on genuine skills such as singing or being able to write or do poetry. Is this in this same ballpark as the swimsuit issue, or are we talking?
Well, I think it's a little bit different, but I think, you know, the problem I have with, you know, the beauty pageant sort of thing is the same sort of thing you have, you know, is with the parading of the bodies around.
Right.
To me, one of the simple ways of judging whether something is legitimate is to flip-flop the people in the situation.
Right.
Do we have Mr. Teen contests with boys walking around in thong underwear to accompany their being tested on their intelligence and their singing ability. No.
No,
we don't anywhere. To me, that is real empirical evidence of how we just accept as normal treating women like meat.
Yeah.
And that it's okay to treat them that way. And that is really unacceptable to me. I let me go further and say, I am not opposed at all to women embracing their bodies and celebrating their sexuality.
Right.
Unfortunately, what gets marketed in this culture is titillation. It's not sexuality. It's pseudo-sexuality. And it tells boys that they should value a woman's cleavage more than the size of her brain or her heart. And it tells girls that they are not to have desires of their own, but only to be objects of some man's desire. And that's bad. That is wrong for our children. When we put our children's face into that scenario, whether it's a female or a male child, it's just not good for them. And that's where, you know, the problem is. We're not anti-sex, you know, like a lot of religious groups that portray this stuff. It's like, I want my daughters to have the freedom to, you know, really be full in their sexuality and empowered by their sexuality. And it's really hard for women to do that in the air that we breathe in this culture and the messages that it has about women.
Okay, well, you got time for a phone call or two here?
Absolutely.
All right, and let me see. We have Xavier from Santa Cruz, California. Xavier, how you doing?
Excellent.
Great, what you got?
Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, you know, I don't want to take anything away from what your guest is saying because I totally agree.
You're right.
And in addition to that, I think that, you know, whenever you first mentioned you were going to have a guest on fathers and daughters, I thought, yeah, great. You know, I think a lot of times men aren't supported as being an active parent. I think a lot of times I was listening to the news in between. They were talking about farmers and how they were like machines in the fields. And I think fathers a lot of times are thought of as like earning machines.
Exactly.
You know, they aren't considered people with feelings. They get depressed whenever they're divorced from a family situation. And I think we need to start thinking about human beings too.
Whoa. Yep. Okay. I think we're still all here.
Well, I would agree. And I think, you know, part of the problem is that we as men have internalized that notion too much, that notion that we're second-class parents, that we're not as important. Mm-hmm. We did a survey in 2004 on the state of father-daughter relationships in the United States. You may not believe me, but this is absolutely true. Nobody had ever before done a national survey on father-daughter relationships. There had never been.
Well, it seems,
which is kind of stunning.
Well, I'm not that surprised, Joe, and I just want to interject here because it seems to me, Joe, that so often that it's the mother's relationship with the daughter that is counted, that society just kind of expects us as fathers to be aloof from our daughters, don't they?
Well, and I think that we believe that.
Right.
This survey we did, and I'll give you an example from this survey. Three quarters, 75% of the fathers we surveyed said that they had a good or excellent relationship with their daughters.
Yeah.
But 60, which, you know, you ask any group of daughters and you're not going to find 75% of them would say they were great with their father. But more disturbing was, you know, that 66% of the fathers said that their active involvement in their daughter's life was not important to their daughter's health and well-being.
Wow.
In other words, we think we have a great relationship, but we also think we don't matter.
You know, I wanted to also point out, you know, a lot of times we focus on the idea that women don't earn as much as men in society. And I think one of the things, reasons why that is because our society, when men get divorced, they lose custody of the kids. In a situation where they're not divorced, it's the man who's expected to go out and earn the primary breadwinner. And if we were to change that around where men weren't thought of as the workhorses, then I think that in a hiring situation, women would be considered more being worth paying, being paid the same amount.
Hey,
I think that that's up to us as men.
Xavier,
can
that
happen? And to be there, we have to broaden our definition of what it means to be a provider to our family. So we have to provide money. But we also have to provide time and
Attention. Oh,
and
boy.
Attention and experience, all those sorts of things, too.
Exactly
what you're talking about.
I want to just mention we're talking with Joe Kelly, president of Dads and Daughters, on the Internet, and just spell it out, dadsanddaughters.org. Just spell it out plain English. And they've got a pretty informative website there. Xavier, are you a father of a daughter?
No. In fact, I've never been married and don't have any kids that I know of. No, I don't have any kids.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for the call.
Well, I appreciate your having an enlightened attitude about this anyway.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks a lot. Oh, I think it's important. And you know, I don't know, maybe I just understood it at some basic level from the get-go that you had to be, you've got to be involved with your kids,
right?
Whether
absolutely.
They're male or female,
right.
I think it just sets such a. I said, I hope I try to set a good enough example for my daughter that when she comes to pick a man for her, she's going to be fussy because she's going to look and say, "Hey, I don't have to settle for that."
Exactly, and I think that's one of the things that we give to our daughters by being involved in their lives, because we represent not just masculinity, we represent a partner,
right.
A lifelong partner. And whether my daughter grows up to be a partner with a man or a woman, she's probably going to be looking for people who have my quality.
Okay. Hard break, Joe. I got to dump out here.
Okay.
Rama Schneider in for Tom Hartman.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This is Vivilnik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Love rules.
Our son gets mad. He tries to shout.
We'll take away his cell phone, his video game.
And if we have to, we'll take away his freedom.
He's got to understand that there will be consequences for breaking our rules.
It doesn't matter that he's not smoking. When we say not to hang out with the weed crowd,
we mean it.
That's what it takes to keep him away from marijuana.
And we love him enough to live with that.
Love, the anti-drug. Call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com for information on how to prevent your child from using marijuana.
Paid for by ONDCP.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. If you'd like to help bring the Tom Hartman program to a radio station in your area, please let us know. We have tools to help you make that happen. For more information, go to www.tomhartman.com and click on the Bring Tom Show to Your Town link on the left side of the page. Thanks for your help in bringing uncommon sense from the radical middle to your community.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palisex books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. Just so long as I'm the dictator.
You gave them the old...
All right. All right, Rama Schneider in for Tom Hartman. Tom Hartman is in transit today. He will be back live and well with everybody tomorrow. In the meantime, you have me. But even better than that, right now on the phone with us, we have Ms. Ellen Ratner from the Talk Radio News Service. How are you doing, Ellen?
Well, I'm in recovery from last night's speech. Unfortunately, I had to be up in the Capitol to witness this insanity. But more than that, today's insanity is Senator McCain went after General Myers today during the armed services speech. General Myers said he didn't know how many numbers of insurgents there were. And then he sort of later said, well, he could get the numbers, but it was classified. And at which point McCain took off and said that the American people had a right to know how many insurgents there were.
Well, at least a ballpark figure, I would think, would be a nice thing. Why?
Senator Kennedy wanted to know when the Iraqis were going to fight for their own country.
Right.
And then Wolfowitz came out with his little platitude saying that the march of democracy around the world was impressive.
Yeah. Did they?
I must have missed the march.
Well, I'm trying to fit Haiti and Venezuela into all of this. So, you know, I'm having problems with it, too. Ellen.
And then Susan Collins from Maine, a Republican, started reading emails from soldiers saying that one group did not even have radios, and so they had to communicate with each other via email. This is in one unit.
Jeez.
While they're on the battlefield. Senator Byrd starts talking about the suffering and bravery, and she also talked about the lack, and then back to Susan Collins, the lack of just basic equipment that our troops are suffering.
Well, now, what was this? Was this a Senate hearing, Ellen?
It's a Senate Armed Services, sorry.
Senate Armed Services, and they just had that this morning, right?
And they had what, I'm sorry?
They just had their committee meeting this morning.
That's right.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure I didn't miss anything.
So, Mr. Bush is out in five states over the next 2 days pushing his Social Security.
Right.
And he's going to states where he's trying to goose members of Congress. I just spoke to, yesterday, the governor of Montana said, you know, yes, they're going to greet Bush and they're going to, you know, he's the governor. He will greet him in his state.
Yeah.
But no, he wasn't going to let Bush goose him into trying to really move ahead try and get him to support Social Security as a way of, you know, he's also going, obviously, into North Dakota to try and get Ken Conrad and those folks to come along because he knows that they're both Democrats in a state that went overwhelmingly for George Bush.
Yeah, well, we'll have to see how that plays out. If you don't mind, I want to get back there to the Venezuela, actually, because I remember during Condoleezza Rice's hearings for her Secretary of State appointment, for some reason, and it seemed to me like it came out of the blue, Venezuela was brought up by four different senators in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. And in Bush's State of the Union address, when he was talking about overseas, he pretty much talked specifically about Mideast, Iraq, Syria, Iran, Egypt got mentioned, Saudi Arabia got mentioned. So he obviously was at least trying to draw attention to that region, but it seems that the senators asking Condoleezza Rice about Venezuela and issues around there, for instance, China moving in and making trade deals with Venezuela and selling military equipment. What I'm trying to get at with you, Ellen, because you talk to these people, is there a sense that we're not paying as much attention to Venezuela as we should be?
Well, I think the Bush administration clearly tried to get a coup going on in Venezuela.
Right, that was 2002.
Because some of their rich friends don't like the current president. And then they denied, basically, that they had tried to undermine the elected Venezuelan government.
Yeah.
But everybody knows that they had. It's just another little CIA plot, courtesy of George W. Bush.
Okay, well, Ellen from the Talk Radio News Service, thank you very much for calling up. You have a safe
You're very
day.
Well.
Bye-bye. Rama Schneider, sitting in for Tom Hartman.
Hank Montenegro of Morganville, New Jersey wrote, "Dear Mr. Oreck, ever since we purchased your 8-pound Oreck XL vacuum, my wife has been in heaven. Recently, she panicked, believing she'd broken the vacuum. I contacted your customer service department, and after a few questions, I was sent a replacement part at no charge. The machine is as good as new. Try my 8-pound Oreck XL risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
United Airlines flight attendants and pilots accepted new contracts on Monday, while the Mechanics Union rejected their offer this weekend. In an effort to emerge from bankruptcy, the airline has been reducing wages and benefits across the board. The mechanics overwhelmingly voted down the contract offer, and more than 85% voted to authorize strike action. Richard Turk is the communications director for the Aircraft Mechanics Fraternal Association.
Basically, the strike part of it's not going to come into play unless the judge abrogates our contract. If he abrogates our contract, we feel we have the right to strike. You can't change someone's contract and expect them to continue to work under it without having the right to self-help.
Turk says that each member has their own reason for rejecting the contract because not a single item in it wasn't concessionary.
I think the overriding issue is that most of the membership feels like enough is enough. We've taken pay cuts and we've done everything we can to help sustain United Airlines. We're willing to make United a better company, but until they change the way they do business, nothing's going to happen. They're not going to make money, even when they continue to take pay cuts from us and subsidize fares with it.
The pilots agreed to an 11.8% pay cut, and the flight attendants will have their wages reduced by 9.5%. As for the mechanics, Turk says that the ball is now in the airline's court.
Montana has joined a list of red states where state employees face problems from Republicans over collective bargaining. Republicans in Montana's state house are holding up approval of a collective bargaining agreement reached between the Montana Public Employees Association and Governor Brian Schweitzer. Schweitzer is a newly elected Democratic governor. Tom Schneider, executive director of the Montana Public Employees Association, says state employees face a political stalemate forced by Republicans in Montana who control half of the state house.
Now we have a stalemated situation where at the present time we don't have a pay bill per se before the legislature because the Republicans refuse to back off of their proposal and the Democrats are sticking with what was negotiated with the governor.
Democrats control the state Senate in Montana and there's a Democratic governor as well, but the state House must also sign off on the pay raise for state workers. Schneider says state workers in Montana have the right to strike. And it would be a shame if that had to happen to enforce an agreement that the governor has already approved. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. America's harvest of shame continues when it comes to working and living conditions for farm workers. Oxfam says nearly 2 million farm workers, mostly immigrants, work like machines in the fields for poverty wages. Half of all farm worker families earn less than $10,000 a year. A tomato farm worker must pick nearly 2 tons of tomatoes to earn $50. Farm workers in the U.S. today are effectively earning 30% less than they were in 1980.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
bringing democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
How about putting it this way? Do you think that other world leaders would have authority to authorize the torture of U.S. citizens if they deemed it necessary for their national security?
Senator, I don't know what laws other world leaders would be bound by. I think it would. I'm not in a position to answer that question.
I don't know. Hey, just call me Alberto I Love Torture Gonzalez and Senator. If it's legal for them to torture U.S. citizens, it's just fine with me. Eek! Oh, man. Okay, look, you know, I'm going to... This is normally Tom would come on and give you all a treat of the NLP lesson, all right? Now, the difference between Tom and myself on NLP, he knows what he's talking about, I don't. So I'm not going to try to give you an NLP lesson. I have a hard enough time trying to remember what the initials stand for, neuro-linguistic programming, I believe. If I'm wrong, I'm sure the folks in the chat room will let me know. It's you go to TomHartman.com and click on chat. You get into what is the it's the collection of the smartest people in the world. There's no doubt about it. The evidence of the fact they're so smart is what they've got going on in the chat room. And I just can't tell you what's in there because you'll have to go find out yourself. But you want to stop in. The chat room's absolutely fine. You'll also, while you're over on the internet, stop by at democraticmatch.com. You never know. Your next liberal-hearted or progressive-hearted sweetie may be over there. And after you meet her on Democrat or him on democraticmatch.com, you take your new heartthrob, go out to a nice romantic dinner and a beach somewhere. Bring along some wine that you get from EcoWine. That's EcoWine.com, 1-888-ECO-WINE. And, you know, then you guys can keep in contact afterwards on your new Macintosh computers that you get from smalldog.com, 1-800-511-MAX. Rama is always wrong. Why does he even bother to ask, asked Benedict at large. thanks, guys. All right. How to make me feel better. Oh, yeah. 1-866-889-8894. If you've got anything to chime in, we do have a guest coming up at the next hour. We got the next half hour here free for the phones or whatnot, and I have a little bit to discuss. Next hour, we've got somebody who was testifying before the Senate about the misnamed Clear Skies Initiative. So that's going to be a really interesting discussion, too. I'm going to give you the Rama brand of NLP. And it's pretty close, I understand. So I'm not calling it an NLP class, but detainees being severely beaten and forced to stand spread eagle up against a wall. Detainees forced to stand spread eagle while an interrogator kicks them continuously on the inside of the legs. I think we could all agree those things would be considered torture. Detainees beaten, some receiving injuries that were substantial, others receiving massive injuries. I think we could all agree that's torture. A detainee subjected to comparatively trivial beatings that resulted in a perforation of the detainee's eardrum and some minor bruising. I think we would agree that's probably torture. When you or I or normal people use the term torture, we have a distinctive set of things in our mind. It's things that cause that when you have somebody in your control and you cause them pain and anguish and suffering, we all think when you hear somebody say torture, this is what most people think. like I say, detainees being severely beaten and forced to stand spread eagle against a wall. We would, you walk up to anybody. I don't care whether they voted for Bush or voted for Kerry or voted for David Cobb, Bednarik, I don't care who. Anyone, anybody would call that torture. Now, what you have to understand, the Bush administration and their apologists in D.C. are not like the biggest majority of people in the United States. They are not at all like us, because to them, torture does not include detainees being severely beaten and forced to stand spread eagle up against a wall. Torture does not include detainees being forced to stand spread eagle while being continuously kicked on the inside of the legs. Detainees being beaten to the point of receiving substantial and massive injuries. None of that. When you hear George Bush, Alberto Gonzalez, etc., talk about torture, they're not including that. That's why I played this clip.
How about putting it this way? Do you think that other world leaders would have authority to authorize the torture of U.S. citizens if they deemed it necessary for their national security?
Senator, I don't know what laws other world leaders would be bound by. I think it would. I'm not in a position to answer that question.
See, they're looking at what's legal to define torture. Now, how do I know this? Because I am looking at the Bybee memo in a part that's never been refuted by anybody in the Bush administration. And the examples that I read to you about the detainees being severely beaten and spread eagle up against a wall with the inside of their legs continuously kicked, massive injuries, etc., perforated eardrum, those are all examples given that as being things that were not torture. So why is there this disconnect between 99% of the United States of America and the Bush administration? When George Bush says torture, we all picture what the normal definition of torture is. They don't. They picture what can be excused by law. That's what they're picturing. And that's my linguistic programming lesson of the day, is to understand, to ask people, to find out, to probe. And when somebody uses a word, and if you think you're hearing something wrong, what is it that they're really saying? You know? So when Bush says he doesn't want to torture people, he's narrowing the definition deliberately to create a false impression. That's called a lie. But he's not using the same definition that 99% of America uses. And especially the same for Alberto Gonzalez. All right. What do we got? We have David, Baton Rouge, Louisiana. How you doing, David?
I'm doing fine. How about yourself?
I'm doing great, sir.
I don't know if you remember, I called right from the top of the hour.
Yes, I do.
Unfortunately, I wasn't able to continue listening to the show because I've got you on satellite. You're not local. And they don't have... They don't keep you all after the first hour.
Yeah, are you driving a truck or something then?
No, I'm in my car.
Oh, then you still can't use the internet. Okay. All right, so go ahead.
No, I'm listening on satellite radio.
Oh, okay. Good.
Okay.
All right, so go ahead.
All right. Well, what I had called about, I heard y'all earlier discussing the Social Security issues, and like I said before, I'm a conservative generally. I've got some libertarian leanings.
Okay.
I like the idea in general of the privatization. But I have some problems, some of the same ones you do with it. I don't know how much influence I want the government having over what areas of the stock market do well and things like that, what our money goes into.
Right.
Seems a bit odd. But what I wanted to hear from you was your opinion on some of the things that I do think is good reasons for it.
Okay.
And that's would you agree with me that if the system had originally allowed people to invest some of their money, that there would be more money available to those people now, and they would be getting more than the average of, what, $850, $900 a month?
I can't agree with that simply because I see too many written examples that go against that. You know, it all depends on when you started investing, how much you put in, and when you started withdrawing. So, and you got to take into consideration inflation and the whole nine yards. So, what you're asking me, and I can't answer it that way, David, because I view Social Security as an insurance program, and that's really what it's meant. Age, old age and survivor's insurance. That's the name of it, for God's sake.
Okay.
Now, you know, an investment is by definition a risk, and you understand that, I think, by what you were saying before. Anybody could go out and, if they have the money, could go out and invest in the stock market and see, take the risk and see what happens. But you buy an insurance policy as a guarantee against something happening. And if you take the money out of the guarantee, which the government uniquely in this country can provide when it comes to this sort of program, when you take the guarantee out of it, it's not an insurance program anymore. You know, Bush is talking about turning Social Security's retirement or survivors insurance program into a retirement investment program. And those are two very different animals. So I don't think that you can mix the two. I really don't. The benefits of one are not the benefits of the other.
Okay. I'm sorry. Did I cut you off?
No, fine. Go ahead.
Well, I find that a little odd because I'm sure, you know, you're aware that if you pay an insurance premium, that money is turned around and put into the same stock market that they're talking about putting it into, and that's how you're able to get that return later on in life. So,
well, not,
I don't see where.
Because
I mean,
not,
if this country over the course of 30 or 40 years, if our stock market doesn't, you know, provide a better return than what's happened with Social Security, we're going to be in a lot bigger trouble than Social Security anyway. You're not going to have the tax base in order to pay off.
Well, in some ways, that I could deal with that in some ways. I mean, as it is right now, let's face it, if we did absolutely nothing come 2042, we'd have to reduce all benefits to 75% of what their level would be otherwise come 2042. But here's the difference between a commercial insurance program and Social Security. There's a big one, and what you said is, yeah, the insurance companies put their money into the stock market. Good stock market years mean good return for the insurance company. Bad years mean the insurance companies up their rates, et cetera. That's what happened with this, medical malpractice insurance, for example. Social Security is put in government-guaranteed bonds, okay? And these bonds are a promise. Not back to the government, not to pay itself back. These bonds are a promise to individuals that when their turn comes to collect the insurance policy, something will be there for them. And the only way that Social Security will run out of money is if the government decides to default on its own debt. That's the only possible way Social Security can run out of money. And so I think there's a big difference. To me, the government, the United States of America, every bill, every dollar bill that you hand around really has no value. It has the value only in that it's backed by the full faith and credit of the United States government. Our Social Security surplus fund is backed by the full faith and credit of the United States government. I don't turn down $10, $20, $50 bills from people because I think that its value will be there. I'm not going to, for the same reason, Social Security has a value, and it's there, and we just have to live up to our promises on it and also our responsibilities.
All right, but at some point, when the number of retirees begins to equalize or, you know,
yeah, well,
with the number of people actually paying in, there's going to come a point where it's just not feasible for the working people to continue to support a number that's a half of
You know, a lot of this money that's gone out has gone to the benefits of corporations, for instance. Let's get corporations back to paying a good, healthy income tax. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, look, we give corporations all sorts of benefits in this country, and we just keep cutting them one break after another break after another break. You have massive corporations like ExxonMobil now that aren't paying any income tax by the end of the year. Enron was getting tax returns from the government. You know, they weren't paying. They were getting money from the government. Let's turn around and say, look, we need society to chip in and stay together and stay united on this issue with Social Security. So we're going to have to pay for it. Just like they should have said, if they really felt that this invasion of Iraq was so important, they should have come to us and said, we need to stick together in this war with Iraq. Therefore, we're all going to gather together and pay for it, which they don't want to do. And that's where I think, David, the disconnect is.
Okay, well, that's I appreciate your time. I'm sorry I don't get to listen to you anymore.
Well, that's great. And thank you for calling, and I appreciate listening to you too, sir.
All right. You have a good day.
You too. All right. I guess let's keep cruising on over to, let's see, Rick from Michigan. How you doing, Rick? Oh, I don't know. I can barely hear you, Rick. Yeah. Hey, why don't, Rick, we're going to come up on a commercial break here. I can really hardly hear you at all. I'm going to hang up on you, and why don't you just give us a call back? Maybe we can get a better connection.
Okay, I'll try.
All right. Good deal. This whole Social Security thing, the Bush administration, George Bush, first of all, you got to understand, this is a guy who, as early as 1978, was trying to run his first House race in part based on, Social Security was going to be bankrupt by 1988. And it's not. Social Security actually can't go bankrupt because, at a bare minimum, it's going to be financed by current tax collections. Now, I'm no fool, and I know how to count money. And I also happen to understand that if something comes up and the tax dollars aren't there to keep my level of Social Security when I retire, I also understand that, hey, I might lose some of that. And that's fine. But let's stop kidding around about what we're doing with the Social Security Fund. Let's stop fooling ourselves about what it really means and whether it's really got stuff in there. The Social Security Fund is backed by the full faith and credit of the United States government. Rama Schneider in for Tom Hartman.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brush show, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global Warning, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet, the reason for our culture's blind behavior, and how we can fix the problem. There is information. There is hope. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late. Now with new updated information, available in bookstores everywhere.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul Out of His Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555. And mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's The Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
America's attitude toward nuclear power is worlds away from that of some other countries. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Switzerland and Japan generate nearly 40% of their electricity from nuclear reactors. And last year, China announced plans to build 30 nuclear power plants in coming years. By comparison, the United States has virtually halted nuclear construction, relying on the technology for only 20% of its electricity. Michael Corradini is a nuclear engineer at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He says many countries have turned toward nuclear energy because they have fewer resources than the United States does.
The international scene very much depends on that country's ability to get energy indigenous to its borders.
Corradini says Japan is an example. It has no energy resources such as coal or oil. Corradini says nuclear power also gives heavily populated developing countries a way to improve.
The most interesting thing are the developing nations, where they're trying to move up in economic status and standard of living. China's an example, Korea's an example. And in all those cases, you see that nuclear power is really considered to be one, not the only, but one of the ways to do it.
Corradini contends that more nuclear power would help the U.S. cut its reliance on coal and natural gas, but the failure to effectively deal with nuclear waste is the main factor weighing against the technology.
If we continue to simply store it and not deal with it, it is not really addressing the thing that many people worry about, which is if you produce waste in the form of spent fuel, are you starting to do something with it?
Japan, France, and other countries reprocess nuclear waste as a way to reduce it. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those Nazis in Tiananmen.
So when you say that you want the U.S. to adhere to international and U.S. laws, that's not very comforting. This is a moral question. Is torture ever justified?
Look, I'm going to say it one more time. If I could, maybe I can be more clear.
No.
The instructions went out to our people to adhere to law.
Idiot.
That ought to comfort you. We're a nation of law. We adhere to laws.
Moron.
We have laws on the books.
Liar.
You might look at those laws.
Thief.
And that might provide comfort for you.
Cheat.
And those were the instructions out of from me to the government.
To follow the law. That's right. So it's not torture if it's not against the law. So all you got to do is figure out a way to make it legal. And then it ain't torture, so we don't engage in torture. All we do is stick cigarettes, lit cigarettes in their ears and hang them by handcuffs and beat them and, God, who knows what else. All right. On the phone with us, Rick from Michigan. How you doing, Rick?
Good, Rami. Yourself?
Oh, boy. Okay, hey, look, try to speak up because we're getting a bad connection again, but let's give it a try.
Okay, first question. What country did Miguel Estrada come from?
Miguel Estrada. That's going to tell me South, Central or South America, huh?
Well, their idea of torture is a lot different than ours, you know, because we send all these puppet regimes down there that are set up by the schools of America, so they're used to that down there.
Well, are they used to it, or is it kind of pushed on them?
Well, it gets pushed on them.
Okay.
Now, John was talking about Saddam and was it worth it?
Yeah.
Well, he never did anything to me, and, you know, just like that table with the hole in the middle where you had the three cups and the ball.
Yep.
And they pay big bucks to go and find out where the ball is, and they don't find it.
Yep.
You know, I think Hans Blix did a good job of telling us that wasn't anything there to start with.
Yeah, three-card Monty is what I'm thinking. They do it with the cards in the big cities. That's where I see that.
Exactly. So, you know, we did the same thing here at Kent State, you know, when we had people that weren't going against, going with the government. They were shot by their own people.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we forget we're not a perfect country, and too often we get pushed into this. Well, people allow themselves to get pushed into this patriotism, which doesn't mean making your country better. Their idea of patriotism is we're already the best, we're the finest, we're the epitome of goodness and greatness. And I don't know. Yeah, they just leave out the fact we have to change a lot too.
Right, Social Security, just take the cap off it. Make everybody pay into the system.
There you go.
Talk to you later.
All right. Thanks a lot, Rick.
Yep, bye. Bye.
Okay. That's going to wrap it up for this, the second hour. Still one more hour, fun and games. Rama Schneider in for Tom Hartman. Tom is in transit today. He will be with you live and well tomorrow. In the meantime, stick around. It's the news, and then you'll be back.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
The AFL-CIO has chosen not to endorse anyone in a race that some say will determine the future of the Democratic Party. Upon hearing the news, former Texas Congressman Martin Frost, who is depending on an endorsement from the Labor Federation, announced his intent to drop out of the race for chairman of the Democratic National Committee. Union officials say Frost didn't show enough movement to win labor support. The departure of Frost narrows the field to former Vermont Governor Howard Dean, New Democrat Network President Simon Rosenberg, former Indiana Representative Tim Romer, and political consultant Donnie Fowler. Gerald McEntee, president of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, told the Associated Press that at the AFL-CIO political meeting, some were for Frost and some were for Dean, but the committee decided that it would be best to let individual unions decide for themselves. Many see Frost dropping out as a boost for Fowler, who has tried to position himself as the anti-Dean. While the AFL-CIO has chosen not to endorse anyone, individual unions have begun announcing support for candidates. Just this week, the United Auto Workers and the United Steelworkers of America gave their nods to Howard Dean. The vote will be held in Washington, D.C. on February 12th.
As President Bush brings his Social Security privatization pitch to Midwest states today, including North and South Dakota and Nebraska, the AFL-CIO is joining other progressive groups to rally against it. AFL-CIO Midwest Representative Shelley Zeeberg says that draining money from Social Security into private accounts undermines Social Security while creating as much as $2 trillion in more federal debt. Seberg says not only does Bush's irresponsible scheme not strengthen Social Security, but it undermines it.
Well, the truth of the matter is, under the Bush plan, Social Security would run out of money 14 years sooner than is now expected. And so essentially, this makes Social Security funding problems even worse, not better.
France may soon see an end to its 35-hour work week. While a recent poll shows the majority of French workers don't want to work more, the parliament has begun a three-day debate on the issue. They are debating a bill that would allow workers to clock more than 35 hours a week in return for more pay. The government issued a statement that says a longer work week is important to keep the country's economy stimulated.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. This year, according to Deloitte and Touche, the top 100 global financial services firms will offshore more than $200 billion of their operating costs. TechWeb says offshoring in information tech industries is expected to grow nearly 20% each year through 2008, with the average company sending 60% of its computer application work to low-wage nations by 2009. According to a University of California, Berkeley study, 14 million Americans hold jobs at risk of being outsourced. You've been listening to WIN. Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament?
How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Credit card companies love you. Giants like Citibank, Chase Manhattan, and MBNA constantly fill our mailboxes with little love letters, wooing us to accept their cards. But, like so many love affairs, once you've signed up, the companies suddenly show an ugly, grasping, selfish side of their personality. What you learn is that credit firms seem to enjoy penalizing their customers. For example, I recently paid a monthly bill of about $1,000 on an MBNA card, but I accidentally wrote a check that was $10 short. The next month, MBNA hit me for an interest finance charge of $21. That's an interest of more than 200% on a $10 debt. Oh, they calmly explained when I called, we don't just assess the penalty on the amount you were short, but on the entire $1,000 that you owed for the month, even though you already had paid $990 of it. Check the fine print of your agreement, they said, lovingly. Perhaps you, like me, try to pay your balance in full each month to avoid such usurious interest rates. But now, they've invented a most unloving trick. Most of us assume that our bills are not due until 30 days after we get them in the mail. The banks, however, have oh so quietly shrunk this common grace period to 20 days or less. Also, Citibank and MBNA are among those that now include sneaky fine print specifying an hour that your payment is due, say 1 p.m. on the 20th. Miss it by a minute, and they can whack you with a late fee of up to $39, plus penalty interest rates as high as 30%, even though you think you paid your bill on time and in full. This is Jim Hightower saying, they stiff their own customers because it's hugely profitable. Credit card banks collected nearly $15 billion from us in penalty fees last year. To fight back, call U.S. PIRG, 212-546-9707.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Ah! It's ugly! It's scary! It's America! It's also Rama Schneider in for Tom Hartman on the Tom Hartman Radio Show, where every time Rush Limbaugh hears this theme of music, boy, that oxy level goes way up. Viagra for your brain, where progressives never felt so good. Liberals fiendishly plot for total world domination. You betcha. We're all that and more. Tom is in transit today, folks, and he will be back with everyone live and well tomorrow. That much I do promise you. So, and everything going good here. If you want to play on the Tom Hartman Radio Show, all you got to do, get your grubby little fingers over to the phone and punch out 1-866-889-8894. And I guess to head right to the phone here right away anyway, because we do have a gentleman kind enough to come on and talk about a very important topic This is John D. Walk. He's Clean Air Director for the Natural Resources Defense Council. And hello, Mr. Walk, and I assume that's at the national level of the Natural Resources Defense Council.
That's correct. Good afternoon. I am in the Washington, D.C. office of NRDC.
Right. And I now, every state has a Natural Resources Defense Council of their own, don't they?
Well, let me clarify.
Vermont
NRDC
has one.
Is an environmental group similar to the Sierra Club, and
right.
We have organizations in four states, four cities, New York, D.C., Los Angeles, and San Francisco. Every state does have a regulatory agency that they sometimes call, natural resources offices.
Well, now, Vermont, for instance, does have, it's the Vermont Natural Resources Defense Council.
That's correct.
And are they affiliated with you guys then, or just by
name? No, we just have offices, again, in New York and California and D.C. The state agencies and state regulatory bodies sometimes use names similar to ours, and I believe that one in Vermont is a state agency.
Do you ever just sue them for a little extra cash?
Well, I wish I could say that supplemented my income, but no. In fact, we mostly bring our lawsuits against EPA for violating the Federal Clean Air Act, and I don't recover any money for those lawsuits. We just try to help them correct their behavior and conform to the law.
Well, you guys have been doing a really great job in standing up for a lot of people in the physical environment, putting out a lot of excellent information, lobbying the government, all the things that you've done. You were just, as a matter of fact, yesterday appeared before the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee. What was that all about?
Well, the Bush administration has put forward a air pollution bill in Congress that the Republicans are trying to pass, and President Bush mentioned it in his State of the Union address last night. They call it the Clear Skies Bill, but most folks in Washington call it the Clear Lies, Dirty Skies Bill. It regulates power plants and their air pollution, but in fact weakens the current Clean Air Act and worsens health protections that we already have under the current law.
Well, this is the second point you just made is one that I want to start with, because I view this, it's insane that people don't realize that if we don't take care of our source of food, water, air, and shelter, and those are the four items every human being needs literally to survive, and if we don't take care of our source of food, water, air, and shelter, which is also known as the physical environment, in other words, if we're not environmentalists, we're might as well just shoot ourselves, shouldn't we? I'm looking at the numbers in your not in your general statement, but in the written testimony that you submitted. And you talk about the number of cumulative additional premature deaths and illnesses that the administration's bill allows. And the Clean Air, so-called Clean Air Act, using EPA methods will, come out with 100,000 additional premature deaths and millions of additional asthma attacks. Do I have that right?
That's exactly correct.
My God. So what do senators say when you look at them in the eye and you say, look, this bill is going to hurt people's health. It's going to kill people and harm them. What do they say?
Well, I received a very good reception from some senators yesterday who actually believe that this bill will be worse for the American public. And unfortunately, on the other hand, there were the senators who are sponsoring this bill who are in fact carrying out the agenda of the power plant industry, who really weren't too pleased to hear what I had to say, and I think just would rather focus on other things than the facts of what their bill would accomplish.
Now, okay, so what are they claiming this will accomplish, and what do you know for a fact that it will do otherwise?
Well, what the Bush administration and their allies in Congress are claiming is that this will clean up smog, soot, and mercury pollution from power plants. And the truth is it will do that, but over a much longer time frame and in a much weaker fashion than current law. And that's really what it should come down to. Why would Congress pass a law that weakens the current Clean Air Act? And the truth is that they're doing so because of polluters and their lobbyists. My organization uncovered a fascinating speech that a polluter lobbyist had delivered at the same time he was working with Vice President Cheney's task force back in 2001,
right,
where this lobbyist laid out the agenda for how they were going to weaken the Clean Air Act and slow down the rate of cleanup by power plants and call it a great success. They were going to call it clear skies and convince the public that this was a great thing.
Well, if we give it a nice name, it's going to be good. And the problem is, seen as there's this corporate control of the of most of the media, that if you depend on most television for your reporting, is you'll keep hearing how Clear Skies is going to do all these wonderful things. What was it? What specifically is it that the current regulations, if we enforce them, and I it has to do with upgrading plants and stuff, but what is it that current regulations, if we just enforce what we have, would be an improvement over this misnomered Clear Skies stuff?
Well, here's the bottom line. Today's Clean Air Act promises the delivery of clean air to Americans by the end of this decade, the cleanup of smog and soot pollution to meet public health standards across the country. And the best way, the most cost-effective way to do that is by cleaning up smog and soot pollution from coal-fired power plants. The other thing that current law does today is it requires deep cuts in toxic mercury pollution from the smokestacks of coal-fired power plants, and to do that by 2008.
Right.
The way the administration's bill overturns those protections is to say, well, we'll give you some cuts in those three types of pollution, smog, soot, and mercury, but we're going to delay a nominal deadline for doing so until 2018. And then, because of gimmicks and loopholes that we've written into our legislation, even the pollution cuts that we're claiming won't be achieved until 2025. So it's really a huge scam. The scam is to overturn quicker and better cleanup of those toxic pollutants from power plants, to delay it for two decades, and to claim that you're doing a good thing for the American people.
Okay, we're talking to John Walk, and he's with the Natural Resources Defense Council, and just gave some testimony before the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee yesterday regarding this very act. It's Senate Bill 131, euphemistically known as the Clean Air Act, probably better known as just a bunch of lies act. It really dumbfounds me. Now, according to what you presented in your written testimony, that the administration is promoting a bill, and I'm quoting here, as of 2020, cost the public $15 for every $1 saved by the industry. In other words, we're not only subsidizing the industry, we're also coming out with, you know, how many billion dollars worth of extra medical costs and such. How do you, when you, John, when you go out and talk to people, how do you get around the language of the administration when they say clear skies and it's going to do all these wonderful things? How do you present it to people so that they understand your view of it and the fact that this isn't what the administration is saying really isn't true?
Well, what we explain is to talk about the facts, pointing to the deadlines for cleanup that the current law contains. We talk about enforcing the current law, which will better protect Americans. And as I just did now, if you look at health deadlines being met by 2010 under current law versus the administration's bill that will delay that until after 2025, it's a pretty easy comparison to make, and people can understand that. Another way is the way you just did. The administration likes to talk a good game about cost-benefit analysis and sound science and how they believe in it, but when it turns out that industry has to pay minimal cost in order for the public to have maximum benefits, $15 in reduced health costs to the American people for every dollar industry would have to spend to clean up, well, it shows that, you know, their hypocrisy is designed to favor industry, and people understand that. The best way, and this is something your listeners could check out, We actually got a transcript of the speech by that polluter lobbyist that I mentioned a few minutes ago.
Right.
And we've posted it at our website at nrdc.org, and people can go read for themselves. And it's like having the curtain peeled back and us seeing the, you know, the way the polluters talk to themselves about how they're going to do a number on the American people.
Yeah, nothing like catching people in their own words when you want to expose them. Mercury. Now, I'm kind of confused. I've been under various conceptions of what the mercury control is supposed to be. Is mercury currently considered, as far as control goes, a toxic, or is it just a pollutant which gets looser control?
Well, mercury is a very dangerous neurotoxin, which is especially dangerous to developing children and pregnant women, because it's a brain poison.
Yeah.
And before the Bush administration, everyone considered it a brain poison and a potent neurotoxin.
Okay.
The Bush administration came in, though, and in December of 2003 announced that they just didn't see the need to control mercury as a toxic pollutant anymore. And they were going to revert to a system of regulation under the Clean Air Act that has only been reserved for non-toxic pollution. So, on one hand, they speak out of the side of their mouths about how they care about mercury, but when it comes to actually controlling mercury, they adopt a schedule that will stretch out regulation over 20 years and is far weaker than what American technology can achieve.
And one of the great things about trying to stretch that out, too, that always gives you future option for even more mischief. You know, I mean, let's say we get even more right-wing than the Bush administration. Boy, the next round of regulations would be hellacious, or lack of, I should say.
You're right.
Well, hey, John, I thank you very much for joining us. I appreciate this, and thank you very much for your testimony before the Senate. It's enlightening, and people should go to nrdc.org and check out all the information you have there.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. You have a great day.
You too, sir. Goodbye.
I will. Rama Schneider in for Tom Hartman.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do they know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brush show, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about democraticmatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at democraticmatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
democraticmatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, democraticmatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at democraticmatch.com.
Hank Montenegro of Morganville, New Jersey wrote, "Dear Mr. Oreck, ever since we purchased your 8-pound Oreck XL vacuum, my wife has been in heaven. Recently, she panicked, believing she'd broken the vacuum. I contacted your customer service department, and after a few questions, I was sent a replacement part at no charge. The machine is as good as new. Try my 8-pound Oreck XL risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Now, as we see a little gray in the mirror, or a lot of gray, and we watch our children moving into adulthood, we ask the question, what will be the state of their union?
Now, wait a minute. Wait, I didn't get that. What would be the state of their union? What will be the state of their physical environment? My gosh. Rob Schneider in for Tom Hartman. Tom Hartman, the radio program. Tom is in transit today. He will be back with everybody live and well tomorrow. I guess I'm going to throw in one more quick little plug for myself here. My wife and I do a Sunday evening webcast at GRR Radio. That's GRRradio.com. That's enough self-promotion. I don't like self-promotion. Yeah, sure I do. I love self-promotion. Anybody want to hire me? I'm looking for a job. You want to play on the Tom Hartman Radio Show? Just dial in 1-866-889-8894. And no Socratic arguments, please. These where you try to trap people by asking questions to walk somebody into a paradox or into a contradiction. None of that. That's what John from Louisiana wanted to do with our guests. That's right. I'm still beating up on you, John. Next time I get on, you'll have to call back. I'll give you a shot at me. Oh, boy. Okay.
The goal here is greater security in retirement, so we will set careful guidelines for personal accounts. We'll make sure the money can only go into a conservative mix of bonds and stock funds. We'll make sure that your earnings are not eaten up by hidden Wall Street fees. We'll make sure there are good options to protect your investments from sudden market...
Manana, it goes on and on and on. It's what we're going to make sure that you do this, that, and the other thing. So what George Bush actually did last night at the State of the Union was get up in front of everybody and say, we don't want you to have to pay taxes. You should own your money. So rather than have you pay into the Social Security system, we're going to make you pay into some other system, and then we're going to tell you what to do with your money. Now, the system that they want you to buy into, which is the private accounts, privatization of Social Security being what they're out to get on, has an inherent problem right now. If you invest in the stock market, you're at risk. Now, I don't know if anybody remembers the savings and loans scandal. And it should become required reading for everybody in this country to go back and study the savings and loans scandal, late 80s, early 90s. essentially what happened, a bunch of savings and loans. Reagan deregulated them. They were able to just lend out money left and right without having the proper reserves. And then we had the real estate bubble. So people were not only lending out money without having adequate reserves in the S&Ls, but they were lending out excessive amounts of money to buy property that was way, way, way overpriced. And when the real estate bubble burst, guess what? All of a sudden, there was tons of bad loans running around that nobody could cover. Not the people that owed the loans, not the savings and loans that made the loans. So what happened was the U.S. government stepped in and bailed out all the savings and loans. And I got a folder I could go through. There's a lot of creeps and criminals and crooks involved in the S&L. And yes, the Bush name comes up prominently in there, but that's for another story, another day. The truth is, nobody who had any money in an S&L, even if they had well over the $100,000 FDIC limit at the time, nobody did not get all of their money back. We bailed out tons of people. We held the S&Ls completely harmless because we didn't want to see American citizens lose their hard-earned savings. This is exactly what we're setting up. If you start taking all of this money and you mandate that it goes into the stock market, and then when the stock market starts to look a little pukey, which it will, and someday it's going to crash and burn for a little while, everybody knows this, we're going to have government running the stock market literally day to day, minute to minute, minute detail by minute detail. Why? Because they're going to be afraid to let people lose their retirement.
Love guides.
My daughter has a million things going on in her daily life, from softball to band to voice lessons. My husband and I like to make sure she doesn't spend her idle time idle, because an idle mind is a playground for trouble. You see, occupying our daughter's free time and keeping her active makes us feel confident that she won't be hanging out with the wrong crowds.
Love, the anti-drug. Call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com for information on how to prevent your child from using marijuana.
Paid for by ONDCP.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
The AFL-CIO has chosen not to endorse anyone in a race that some say will determine the future of the Democratic Party. Upon hearing the news, former Texas Congressman Martin Frost, who is depending on an endorsement from the Labor Federation, announced his intent to drop out of the race for chairman of the Democratic National Committee. Union officials say Frost didn't show enough movement to win labor support. The departure of Frost narrows the field to former Vermont Governor Howard Dean, New Democrat Network President Simon Rosenberg, former Indiana Representative Tim Romer, and political consultant Donnie Fowler. Gerald McEntee, president of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, told the Associated Press that at the AFL-CIO political meeting, some were for Frost and some were for Dean, but the committee decided that it would be best to let individual unions decide for themselves. Many see Frost dropping out as a boost for Fowler, who has tried to position himself as the anti-Dean. While the AFL-CIO has chosen not to endorse anyone, individual unions have begun announcing support for candidates. Just this week, the United Auto Workers and the United Steelworkers of America gave their nods to Howard Dean. The vote will be held in Washington, D.C. on February 12th.
As President Bush brings his Social Security privatization pitch to Midwest states today, including North and South Dakota and Nebraska, the AFL-CIO is joining other progressive groups to rally against it. AFL-CIO Midwest Representative Shelley Seberg says that draining money from Social Security into private accounts undermines Social Security while creating as much as $2 trillion in more federal debt. Seberg says not only does Bush's irresponsible scheme not strengthen Social Security, but it undermines it.
Well, the truth of the matter is, under the Bush plan, Social Security would run out of money 14 years sooner than is now expected. And so essentially, this makes Social Security funding problems even worse, not better.
France may soon see an end to its 35-hour work week. While a recent poll shows the majority of French workers don't want to work more, the parliament has begun a three-day debate on the issue. They are debating a bill that would allow workers to clock more than 35 hours a week in return for more pay. The government issued a statement that says a longer work week is important to keep the country's economy stimulated.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. This year, according to Deloitte and Touche, the top 100 global financial services firms will offshore more than $200 billion of their operating costs. TechWeb says offshoring in information tech industries is expected to grow nearly 20% each year through 2008, with the average company sending 60% of its computer application work to low-wage nations by 2009. According to a University of California Berkeley study, 14 million Americans hold jobs at risk of being outsourced. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
We are able to keep arms from him. His military forces have not been rebuilt.
Oh, would that have been Rice talking about Saddam Hussein in July of 2001?
He has not developed any significant capability with respect to weapons of mass destruction. He is unable to project conventional power against his neighbors.
And would that have been Colin Powell talking about Saddam Hussein in February 2001? Oh, you bet. That would have been them, you bet. Yeah, Saddam was a danger.
He has not developed any significant capability with respect to weapons of mass destruction. He is unable to project conventional power against his neighbors.
We are able to keep arms from him. His military forces have not been rebuilt.
But then came the day of fire. 9-11, everything changed, honesty doesn't count anymore. Hey, Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman, the radio program. Doing the world a favor since 1957, on my part anyway. Hey, of course, the world doesn't always seem appreciative of me being around, but that's okay. 1-866-889-8894. The 18-member UAW International Executive Board unanimously voted to endorse Dr. Howard Dean for chair of the Democratic National Committee. UAW President Ron Gittelfinger said on behalf of the board, "We believe that Howard Dean will be a dynamic, innovative, and effective leader for the DNC. Governor Dean has proven his ability to bring new people into the Democratic Party and energize grassroots political activists in all parts of America." Well, four members of the UAW International Executive Board, according to this article, are members of the DNC, Democratic National Committee. I think that's the second big union endorsement Dean's picked up. It seems like, let's just remember Iowa, but Iowa aside, it seems like Howard Dean is going to be the next chair for the Democratic National Committee. Yeah, I don't know if that will be enough to make me want to give the Democrats a second look or not. Now, that's another thing. I'm not a Democrat. But I will say this much. Having experience with Howard Dean as the governor here in Vermont, the Democratic National Committee is going to do very well. And the Democratic Party as a whole will do extremely well with somebody of the integrity and caliber of Howard Dean at the helm. The guy, you know, forget about his presidential run. There were things he did in there that just really seemed out of character for me, in my opinion. Howard Dean knows how to get in the trenches and mix it up. For some reason, he didn't do that in 2003. I don't know why, but, you know, nobody asked me. I used to stay up nights waiting by the phone, waiting for the Dean campaign to call me, and they never did. But so anyway, you know, look, good luck to the Democratic Party, because I think you will do very well with Howard Dean as the DNC chair. Keep with him. I honestly believe that, folks. Strange news from overseas. Georgia, not the state Georgia, the little country Georgia. That's kind of, if you look in between, where would that would be in between the Caspian and, what the heck's that other inland sea over there? But you'll see the country of Georgia. Georgian Prime Minister Zurab Zavenia, who helped lead the revolution that toppled the corruption-tainted regime of Eduard Shevardnadze, died early today from what officials said was apparently a gas leak from a heater. I don't know. It could be a gas leak from the... only reason I mention that is, you know, Georgia is one of these countries sitting on Russia's border, where we are kind of supporting the anti-Russian people. And who knows, gas heaters do malfunction here in Vermont, just up at the college here the other day. We just had a couple, we had one college student die and a couple others taken off to the hospital for, you know, because a gas heater malfunctioned. So for whatever it's worth, the Georgian Prime Minister dead due to a faulty gas heater. If I sound somewhat skeptical of that explanation, I am. I don't know if Tom read this one, because this is a New York Times article from a couple days ago. But just in case, I want to go over it real quick. Congress has given the Pentagon important new authority to fight terrorism by authorizing special operations forces for the first time to spend money to pay informants and recruit foreign paramilitary fighters. We are already an empire in decline, ladies and gentlemen. That is a simple fact. That's not in the news article. But to go back to the article, the new authority, which would also let special operations forces purchase equipment or other items from the foreigners, is spelled out in a single paragraph of an 800-page defense authorization bill passed by Congress, signed into law by Bush in October. It was requested by the Pentagon and the commander of special operations forces. Once upon a time, actually not a whole long time ago, the U.S. military was there to fulfill the federal government's constitutional authority to protect and defend the United States, of the Constitution of the United States of America, its people, and the country. It used to be that the military was the military. The military supplied its own cooks. The military supplied its own medics. The military supplied its own interrogators, intelligence personnel, the grunts, the truck drivers, the helicopter pilots, and on and on and on and on. And it worked out pretty good in the sense that when you went into the military, you didn't go in for a highfalutin career. You didn't go in for an 8-year college degree. You went in because you thought there was something of value, whatever it was, in serving in the military. And when the United States of America wanted to go off and go to war with somebody, they, for the most part, went out and sent the military. Now, yeah, you always hired some. In Vietnam, you had the Montagnards, for instance. And you've always had some irregulars that worked with you. By the way, we call them terrorists now. Wouldn't special operations troops fall under the definition of terrorists? They operate in a lot of places without any uniform or meaningful identification on them, right? They sneak around in countries. They don't identify who they are. They target, in a lot of cases, civilian infrastructure. But I'm sorry. I'm getting sidetracked. But now Congress has explicitly given the Pentagon authority to send special operations troops into countries and to recruit their own armies. In other words, we have taken the lessons of Afghanistan and applied them to our military. We now have warlords in the United States Army. The ancient Roman Empire, when they reached a certain point in their history, they had to reach outside of the Romans, beyond the citizens of Rome, for their military might. They brought in those that they conquered, and they hired, well, they hired people to go fight for them. And then the Roman Empire proceeded to degrade. It degraded because no longer were the Romans directly responsible for the actions of their government. They felt very fine and protected sitting around Rome and inside of Rome, while Assyria and Egypt and what we know as Turkey now, well, all that collapsed. Because the people didn't know. They weren't out doing their own work. They weren't out doing their own fighting. They said, we're rich. We can hire other people to do it. And they were insulated from all the negatives their government did. We've been working on that. Some would argue that's been going on for some time. I certainly could agree with that. But we are going to now, between robots and hiring foreign operatives and foreign militias and letting special ops go around, set themselves up in warlords in different places, we are going to so insulate ourselves from the rest of the world and the real harm that we're causing them and the pain and the suffering that 2,000-pound bombs in cities bring, that when our collapse happens, because at this rate it's not an if, it's a when. What we need is a strong individual to come back and start using the word sacrifice instead of these cretins we have in Washington, D.C. now that are afraid of sacrifice. But until we start hearing a leader, that, and I mean a real leader, who says, look, you got to sacrifice. You got to sacrifice on imperialistic dreams. You got to sacrifice on what you're going to try to make the rest of the world do. You're going to have to sacrifice in your consumption. There's a whole list of things. Until somebody, we're on a downslide. I think it probably started under Reagan, maybe a little bit. Picked up steam under H.W. Bush, Clinton just right down the drag strip with it. And this whole imperialistic attitude, of course, the neocons. They're not, the neocons, they are not like you or I. And even if you're a conservative, these neocons are not like you. They do not have your best interests at heart. They want to just continue to do stuff that is obviously detrimental to the United States of America. They will, our government, that is, when I say they, I'm including all of them down there. I mean, the exception to the rule is the good politician nowadays, I think, down in Washington, D.C. Too many of them have, well, sold their soul to the corporate devil in order to raise campaign money instead of being willing to sacrifice and pound the shoe leather and do things the hard way and build up. Yeah, Bernie Sanders. What a great example of how to run a political campaign. He gets out there and talks to people. And he is so popular, other people go out and go door-to-door campaigning for him. U.S. worker salaries are growing much more slowly than inflation, raising concerns about consumers' ability to repay loans and credit card bills at a time when borrowing is near an all-time high. Just as Americans have begun receiving hefty statements for their holiday purchases in the mail, the government reported on Friday that wages rose a meager 2.5% over the past year, the smallest increase on record. Hello, Mr. George, isn't my economy booming, Bush? Stacked up against a 3.3% overall increases in prices for the year, the data paints an ugly picture of debt-burdened, cash-strapped American consumers struggling to make ends meet. This is a Reuters article. So not only are working families being pressured, but those who are unemployed, 8 million of them by conservative estimates, are still having a difficult time finding jobs. All this comes at a time when Americans are deeper in debt than ever before. Between credit cards, student loans, auto financing, and mortgages, the total debt of American households exceeds $10 trillion. That's 10,000 billion. That's 10 million million dollars. That amounts to well over 90% of yearly national economic output. That's right. If all of our consumer debt, all of our auto financing, our mortgages, our credit card debt, our student loans, put them all together, and essentially that's 90% of 1 year's national economic output. Whoops. Man. Hey, George. Yeah, I don't know. I think that's one Tom covered, too. The reason that I brought that up, I get it in the mail from, you know, I have a credit card. Guess what? I have credit card debt, too. I get it from the credit card company, direct merchants, and I know others send this out, too. A filled-out check just waiting for my signature for $1,650. It's a good check. All I need to do, walk into the bank, sign it, and they'll hand me $1,650. Of course, they're going to put it on my credit card. It's not really a, you know, freebie or anything. They do want their money back. Why are we all getting insulted? Imagine if you're sitting there, you're a single mom, or you're young parents, or you're old parents, or you're old. You're sitting there trying to figure out how to pay some important bills, maybe your medication, maybe your heating bill, maybe your rent, maybe food. And then this pops up in the mail. Oh, let's go cash it. Just go cash it. They're doing this on purpose. The corporations are doing it, and the government's allowing them to do this to us. I get so many offers for these little checks in the mail. I get them from even credit card companies I don't have a credit card with. They want us to cash the check so we'll be indebted to them so they can charge like 20%, 25% annual interest and a $1,650 loan. But that's okay. You put together our auto financing, mortgages, credit cards, student loans, $10 trillion in consumer debt. Rama Schneider in for Tom Hartman.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month per second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call now.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
A
America's most famous naturalist compromised his broad view of wilderness to obtain a narrow set of goals, according to a Kansas historian. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. John Muir has been called a wilderness prophet, but historian Donald Worster says the naturalist's fight to save places like Yosemite diverted his passion for all wilderness into protecting select natural wonders.
It narrowed and focused on the national parks as the place to go find nature, and particularly the greatest, most beautiful places like the Grand Canyon, Yosemite, Yellowstone. Increasingly, those became, for him, nature. And what lay outside those places was less and less interesting to him.
Worster is an environmental historian at the University of Kansas. He says rich, influential friends, people like Teddy Roosevelt and railroad tycoon Edward Harriman, helped Muir save Yosemite, but he says they also compromised the Scottish immigrants' ideals.
In a way, he became compromised by the wonderful linen sheets that he liked to sleep on in these people's houses, the little boutonniere they brought him in the morning. He became their kind of pet. And they would trot John Muir out and say, now tell us some wonderful stories about dogs and birds in your Scottish brogue. And he would light up and do what he was supposed to do.
Muir eventually helped create the National Park Service and founded the Sierra Club. But Worster says Muir seemed blind to the world outside the parks.
He would rail against greedy people trying to destroy Yosemite National Park. But he didn't really connect that up to the economic system, and it was driving environmental change, much of it very destructive, across the entire continent.
In spite of his shortcomings, Muir's legacy is seen by millions of people who visit the national parks each year. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those gnats in Tiananmen Square.
How about putting it this way? Do you think that other world leaders would have authority to authorize the torture of U.S. citizens if they deemed it necessary for their national security?
I don't know what laws other world leaders would be bound by. It. I think it would. I'm not in a position to answer that question.
They are not like us. Neocons are not like you good conservatives either. Don't you get it? Don't you get it? They don't have your best interest in mind. They want to ship your sons and daughters off to Iraq to fatten up the pockets of some rich fat cat, blood-dripping defense contractor CEO. They want you to go off and die so Bush can be a war president. They want to destroy your environment so somebody can make money at the expense of your lungs or maybe your child's life or maybe your parents' liver or something. They are not like you, these neocons. And that's what Bush and company are. They're a bunch of neocons, new age con men. That's all they're doing. And they got it down pat, don't they? So many people laugh. Look, I live with conservatives. My daughter went to a very fundamentalist religious school for several years. And I think it was probably the best way we ever started off her education. I am not afraid. I like conservatives. I like people of religion. I don't like these lying skunks in Washington, D.C. Good news. Hey, by the way, it's not enough just when you listen to stuff like this, don't just get angry. The idea is if you start feeling a little angry bubbling up, use it as a way to get out and do something, even if it's a little thing. You've got to be active, even if it's little stuff. Be active. Some good news. Well, I don't know if this is good news. Texas teens increase sex after abstinence program. Abstinence-only sex education programs, a major plank in President Bush's education plan, have had no impact on teenagers' behavior in his home state of Texas, according to a new study. Despite taking courses emphasizing abstinence-only themes, teenagers in 29 high schools became increasingly sexually active. That's right. They said, don't do that. And what the heck do you think a teenager does when you tell him, don't touch the paint, it's wet, all right? Jeez. So they told him, don't touch the paint because it's wet, and then they forgot to tell him to wear plastic gloves before they do. So now you're going to have all these kids that are, hey, what's this stuff we're not supposed to do? Hey, why is your belly getting bigger? Oh, what's going on? I don't know. Good news, gay marriage constitutional ban fails in conservative Idaho. A proposal to write a ban on same-sex marriage into the Idaho Constitution was defeated today for the second consecutive year. Now, a majority of people in the Idaho Senate did vote in favor of it, but enough people are sitting there looking out for civil rights for our brothers and sisters clear across this country, no matter what their sexual preference is. There are smart people, there are progressive people, they're working at the local level, and they're winning because progressive politics happens at the local level. I had a really good time. I'm going to be sorry Tom's back with you all live and well tomorrow, only in the way that I would like to do tomorrow too, but I can't. So everybody have a really, really great day. Take care. Get out. Do something active. Enjoy yourselves. Hug a neighbor. Hug a kid. I got to get out of here. I'm Rama. Tom will be back tomorrow. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it.